Once again, the early start. Yes, did you forget? We start early now. We start at 3 o'clock and we go till 7 from here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on a bustling Michigan Avenue. Spring was here yesterday. Winter's back today. Oh, man, I love living in Chicago, where you never know from one day to the next what season you're in. It's very, 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 very confusing. But one thing is clear. We have a wonderful show planned for you today. It is always more fun, as you know, when you get involved. How do we get involved, Brian? You know exactly how to get involved. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. When you call in, you'll be talking to Cody. I got to get out of here early. Royal Rumble's on, dude. Goff, he's the executive producer from Rockford, Illinois, and he is, in fact, very, very excited about the Royal Rumble. Be nice to Cody. If you're nice to him, you get to me. That's how it works. If you like social media, and who doesn't, it's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. We're always very active on that because we are SEO and multi-platform. Hip. That's what we are. Right, Cody? We're all about those things.
In that order.
Search engine optimization.
Very optimized.
This whole show is a keyword.
Fully optimized.
Oh, my gosh. It's a hashtag. It's a keyword. It's we've jumbo loaded it with all sorts of sneaky subplots to get you. It's a secret society. That's what we've created here on the broadcast.
One of the many.
Sure. A lot of secret society.
That I keep hearing about, but not too much about.
No, you're just enough. Just enough to know it's a secret. And they go, what? Oh, first rule of secret society. Society, you don't talk about secret society.
But you're kind of jealous when other people talk about other secret societies.
Well, I feel left out. I've got some FOMO.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some fear of missing out
mm-hmm.
for secret societies. I'm like, wait a minute. Aren't I cool enough to have a secret society? That's why Cody and I have started our own. And you're welcome to come in. You know, we're not... The nice thing about our secret society, not exclusionary. We welcome everybody. Kind of defeats the purpose of being secret once you invite everybody. But that's how we roll. We are not bound by conventions, by people saying, listen, to be a secret society, it has to be exclusive. Not us, man. No chance. You come on in. We're going to be talking about all kinds of things today. There's a wonderful event for women to talk about creating laws and enacting things to empower themselves and to make big social changes. We'll talk to one of the organizers of that event after 4 o'clock. We also have to get into this. I don't know if you were listening this week, paying attention. You remember Bears safety Dave Dorson, who unfortunately committed suicide at age 50. His brain was donated to science. We know that he had CTE, and now a new bill that was proposed in the Illinois legislature would try to outlaw tackle football for children under 12. So we'll talk about that at 4:30. Steve Bannon is coming to the University of Chicago. Oh, man, people are upset. We'll talk about that. We're going to talk about, listen, I mentioned that Cody was all excited about the Royal Rumble, which for you WWE fans, you know what that is. For those of you who think wrestling is just comic book, it's a huge event where everybody gets in a ring and beats each other up. Is that pretty much it? They throw each other over the railings. But that's not the biggest WWE or sports news this week.
No, not by a long shot.
No, so we will talk about the biggest sports news of the week. And no, it's not Patrick Kane at the NHL All-Star Game. No, it's not Sox Fest, which, very exciting for the White Sox, rebuilding, looking for a new radio home. I'm looking at you, WGN. Who a better Sox ambassador than myself? But no, this is bigger than all of those. It eclipses even the upcoming Winter Olympics in Pyongyang. It eclipses them all.
This is the biggest thing that's happened to football since Super Bowl I.
Really?
I think.
Since the advent of leather helmets?
I think.
Since Sid Luckman?
Since the advent of helmets.
Oh, wow. This
yeah.
is big.
I would say this is, I mean, this is, it's just so big. It's bigger than the NFL Hall of Fame.
And don't, listen, don't say, oh, wow, it's ironic that you're talking about football in a negative light earlier in the program, and then you're all hyped up about football later in the show. It's not ironic. It's just us. That's how we roll. We're upset about one thing, we're excited about another, just like you in your regular life.
We have a range. It's like an acting range.
Don't box us in.
Right.
We're either very angry or very excited.
Right. So we're like the Robin Williams of WGN Radio. We can be really, really hyper, or we can be dramatic. Right.
Somebody texting in, where's the beat? Well, the beat is no longer on Sundays. We started last week. There was a scheduling change. If you're not up on it, you probably weren't listening last week. We told you all about it. The beat is no longer on Sundays. We are now on Sundays. We've moved from 6 to 9 to 3 to 7. Karen Conti has her own program from 7 to 9 p.m. on Sundays. So that's your Sunday afternoon lineup. Right after Frank Fontana, instead of The Beat, you get us. And then you get Karen Conti from 7 to 9.
And so, most importantly, this is not our fault. So don't call me to complain.
Yeah, don't complain to Cody.
My pay grade's way below.
Big exciting news for most of the guys on The Beat. They're now doing an hour-long stream from 1 to 2 every day, Sports Central, on the WGN stream. So you can listen to them every day for an hour. They still have The Beat on Saturday afternoons. So you're not losing sports. They're just shifting things around a little bit. You know, we have no control over this, folks. I wish we had control. We'd make some decisions, but we don't.
We've not made a decision in like 10 years.
No, we don't get to make decisions.
But even if we did, would we?
Oh, yeah.
Would you make decisions?
Oh, sure.
What's the first thing you would decide?
I don't know if they'd be earth-shattering.
What would you decide? Like, what would you decide?
I don't know. I haven't thought of it because I've never been given the opportunity.
A darker roast of coffee, maybe? Or
any
lighter.
Coffee. Any coffee, first of all. I would make sure there were was water for the staff.
Water would be nice.
This is like a gulag where we have absolutely no human amenities.
Yeah.
So I would change that.
Would you change Christmas decorations so that we aren't looking at Santa's, you know?
No. I would actually make that bigger.
Oh, wow.
I would make it bigger.
Wow.
I love the... Well, now there's no decorations. It's like your house in this studio after Christmas. It feels empty.
We've got the nice vinyl wrapping on the walls of the, you know, the Allstate
logo. Oh, sure.
It looks
like it did before Christmas, but it just doesn't feel as festive.
It's not, yeah, no LED lights.
No garland, no beautiful tree.
No but decking right. The walls.
You know what else we don't have? My crazy galoshes anymore. Because I actually got my foot back this week.
Congratulations walking in two shoes.
It was exciting. I'll be honest. The first day, there's still, for those of you not following the toe saga.
But who isn't?
Well, listen, anybody who listens to this program is, but I'll update the people who aren't. A few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I had surgery on my big toe, on my left foot. So I haven't been able to wear a shoe on said foot. I was wearing a Teva sandal and a big wool sock. They took the stitches out on Wednesday. I'm still having to wrap it, but it's then the doctor, I feel I threatened the doctor and he's cowering a little bit because I warned him before. Well, I didn't warn him. That sounds harsh. I said to him before the start of the surgery, even when we were just planning it, I said, how long a recuperation time? He said, 3 weeks, you'll be good as new. I was like, okay, perfect. So I gave myself a 5 week window because a week from Wednesday, I leave for Mardi Gras. So I gave myself 2 weeks buffer in case something went askew in my healing. So Wednesday was 3 weeks. I mentioned I already had got a horrible infection the first week of post-surgery. So I was on a ton of antibiotics. Then the doctor knows that I'm leaving town. So he knows I'm very, very, man, I'm adamant that this heal up. So I go to the office on Thursday, the third week anniversary of the surgery, and he unwraps it. And it's looking good, you know? I will say this, he was absolutely right. The issue that was the bottom of my toe is completely healed. But now the incision still needs some work. So I'm still kind of bandaging it, but it's better. And the doctor said, don't worry, you're gonna be able to go to those parades. You'll be fine. I said, okay, I better be. So he said, listen, just in case, I'm going to put you on some more antibiotics. And do you ever want to hear your doctor say, just in case, with that kind of tone in his voice that makes him sound like he's not quite sure exactly what's going to happen? And I know medicine is not an exact science all the time, but I want a little more. I even want some false confidence in my physicians. Lie to me a little bit. Just a little. Not a gross exaggeration of the situation, but just give me a little something to say, yeah, you know, you're going to be okay. You'll be fine. So it looks like it's well on its way. I actually showed my wife for the first time. She saw my toe today. She didn't freak out, so it's not ghastly. But things are moving along. So it's nice to actually be able to walk again, which was strange. All right, I have a question for parents whose children are away from them, whether they're in college or they moved away and they're still young enough where you worry about them. And I know most of us will say, well, we're going to worry about our kids till the day we die. But how do you react when things are beyond your control? We'll talk about that and more after this. WGN. We used to be on from 6 to 9. Now we're on from 3 to 7, which is very exciting for us and hopefully for you. Karen Conti, who used to join me from 8 to 9 every week, now has her own program from 7 to 9. And The Beat, which used to inhabit this time space, is now only on Saturdays. But on the WGN stream, there is Sports Central Monday through Friday from 1 to 2. So a lot of changes on Sundays here at WGN, and we're glad that you're around hang out with us. All right, I mentioned there's a phone, Cody. I don't know who's calling. Could it be somebody from management explaining why there's been some confusion? What is that, the big hotlines at the bat phone? What's going on? Security calling in. Dave Schwann out on Michigan Avenue. I know you can't see him, but Dave Schwann, fine newscaster. There he goes, off into the sunset. All right, I mentioned before I wanted to get your opinion if your children are away from home, or whether they're in college or they've graduated and they've just moved to another city, whatever it is, because I'm going through this again. Now, it's only the end of January, so we're like, my daughter's been back at school for 3 weeks, and she's sick again. She called today from urgent care. She's very ill. And I have a hard time with this. I have a hard time when she's sick when she lived at home, because I feel very helpless. And that to me is the worst thing. It's worse than anything when it comes to raising my daughter, is feeling helpless when she is in pain or in need. You know, if she needs some money, if she needs help with a project, I can do that. But when she's sick, I can't really do anything. And when she's sick far away, it's even harder. Adding to the complications, I may have mentioned this before, she is not a good patient. She does not handle nobody handles being sick well. You know, she handles it less than that. She reverts to very childlike behavior when she is ill. A lot of crying and stuff. And I understand. Listen, I don't begrudge her that. Everybody handles it differently. But when she cries, I feel even more helpless. Because then I'm like, I'm sorry. I say the same thing. You know, go to urgent care. I'm at urgent care. Okay, do what they tell you. Okay, I will. Make sure you get some rest. Drink a lot of fluids. I tell her the same thing all the time, and I know it doesn't help. But then she's in this environment that we're getting reports, and this is all over the country. It's horrifying, actually, terrifying, that the flu is ravaging this country so badly now. We've got kids dying, people getting sick all over. There's tons of reports at her school, and I'm sure at your kids' schools, whether it's grade schools or high schools, you've got a lot. The school I was teaching at the other day, one of the kindergarten classrooms had 6 kids out. All the classes have some kids out, all because of the flu. So you know all that, and then you hear from your kid, and it's panic time. I have no idea what to do. No idea. So I just, you know, I give her the same advice. And here's the thing. Then she doesn't listen. And I'm like, well, why do you call me and ask me what to do and then not do what I tell you? Because that seems insane.
But that's what kids do.
I guess it is what kids do, Cody, but it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
If kids seek out their parents' advice, they should follow it to the letter. Thankfully, last time she was, you know, because she asked an Uber to, like, the health center on campus is a joke. It's horrible.
Uh-oh.
So she goes to urgent care, not too far from campus. You know, thankfully we have insurance, so she can go to the urgent care. But then, so she's Ubering there, and I was like, okay, well, they gave her a prescription. Well, I have to Uber to Walgreens. Okay, fine. We'll just go. We'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. And I said, make sure you get Gatorade and all that stuff. Oh, but then I'd have to Uber somewhere else. So what? So Uber, you don't have to worry about paying for it. We'll cover it. I said, go get but I just want to go home. I said, I know you just want to go home, but you got to have the right stuff. Pick up your medicine, pick up, you know, supplies, and then go home. And then I'll hear from her a day later. I'm feeling better, so I'm going out. I go, no, you did. No, no. Stay home. I understand being 21, but at some point you got to stay home. All right, on the other side of the news, I have a quandary that I want to set forward to you. I will ask you about it momentarily. It's WGN. Here's one of these ethical types of questions. So last night, a friend of mine works for a charity, and they were hosting a trivia night. So we went, and part of the, you know, you pay to get in, and there's the teams that win get some cash prizes, but they were also doing a 50-50 raffle. So, here's my quandary, and I want to get your thoughts at 312-981-7200. If you win one of these raffles at a charity event. Do you give the money back or do you keep it? And this is a conversation that we got into. Now, I did not win the money last night, despite buying many tickets for the 50-50 raffle and my team not being smart enough to win the trivia portion of the program. We didn't come in last, which was very good. But we didn't do as well as we thought. I don't want to get into the specifics, but let me just say there were a couple questions that we did get right, and had we argued, we could have probably been overturned the decision. We still wouldn't have won. All right, but that's not the point. The point was there's this 50-50 raffle. Now, they did two of these raffles. The first one, I think the person won a couple hundred bucks, and the second one was like maybe $300. All right, now, they made a big show of telling the, after the second drawing, I guess whoever won that one gave the money back. And they made a big production of, oh, thank you so much. She won the 50-50 raffle and she gave the money back, which spurred the conversation at the table. What would you do? And there were a number of people at the table who said, oh, yeah, we'd probably give it back. Then there were some that said, no, I don't think I'd give it back. I'd want to keep it. There were some that were on the fence, and then my buddy, who works for that charity, said I absolutely would not give it back, because I don't believe in people giving it back, because that way you're going to spur more ticket sales. The more people think they're going to win and get to keep, the more sales you get, so the more money the charity ultimately makes. If people think, well, I got to give the money back if I win it, you're probably going to sell less tickets. And so we got into this big heated debate and with people on both sides. And my point was, well, if you're at a place where perhaps the split the pot is a lot bigger than 150 or 200 bucks, would you consider it? Now, when we go to the Blackhawks games, they have their people run around, and White Sox games, and the Cubs, I believe, do this too. They have the people walking through the stadium selling 50-50 raffle tickets to benefit, let's say, Blackhawks charities, which does a lot of good work. Well, you've got a lot of people in there, and I've seen the split the pot value go up to five figures. And I'm sitting there during the games. I've never won, unfortunately, but I see it like 15 grand, and I'm thinking, no chance. If I win this money, I got 15 grand. But then I figure, well, Blackhawks Charities that night made 15 grand too, so that's a pretty good night for charity fundraising. And the fact that somebody wins that kind of money, again, spurs some more sales. So I don't know where to fall on this. And again, I didn't win, so I didn't, ultimately, I did not have to make the decision, but I will tell you, had I won the 200 bucks, I would have kept it because, I won it. It's like winning any other prize. And I had already donated to the charity for my entrance fee. I had bought a lot of raffle tickets. I purchased drinks at their bar. So I was giving back and supporting them. But this is one of the things I didn't. Another interesting thing, won the cash prizes, the three teams that won cash prizes for the trivia game, they did not give their money back. So where is the difference? Somebody texted in, Keith texted in, he said, Brian, I've won money at a charity event and donated half the money back, so it's a win-win. Okay, I think that's very noble. If you give it back, I think that's great if that's what you choose to do. I think sometimes people feel pressured to have to do it. They're because you think other people are looking at you, like, especially if somebody does it early, then everybody who wins afterward feels like they have to give the money back. Now, I've been in this situation without money, but with prizes, where I've been emceeing events, and I always buy raffle tickets from the event that I'm emceeing. It goes toward the charity that I'm helping with, and that's great. I have no problem with that. I'm excited about it. But they have one of those things where you buy all these tickets, and then you're putting tickets in these silent auction items. And the first year, I won something, and I felt kind of bad. I'm like, so I gave it back. And then the organizers of the event got mad at me. They were like, listen, you won. You bought tickets just like everybody else. If you win something, you should keep the prize. And these, again, the organizers of the event. So I went with that. 312-981-7200. Steve is in Ingleside. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, Brian, it's a win-win situation. If you put in your money and they draw your number, you win and they win because it goes right back to their charity or wherever it has to go, and you come out ahead.
Yeah, so you're happy, and maybe you go down the line and you donate to somebody else.
Correct, or you know, if there's a silent auction, you put that money into a silent auction, so they're gaining.
Yeah,
and there's nothing wrong with it. You're not there you're there to have fun, and you're there to support a charity.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also there, you know, if they get a 50-50 raffle, that's fine. So you just take your money and just bring it around a little bit more.
There you go.
You break even at night, everybody makes out.
I think that's a good point, Steve. Thanks for chiming in. I appreciate it. Let's go to Mark. He's on the road. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
I believe it depends on the charity itself. Because if they have like a silent auction with a gift, they want you to take that gift.
Mm-hmm.
If they have it where it's money, they might want you to donate it back.
Well, then why would they, and I understand your point, but then why, if you're an organization, would you do a 50-50 raffle? Why wouldn't you just try to get, you know, some gift cards and do a raffle, get some gift cards donated and do a raffle that way, so there's no abstract notion. Well, do I need to give it back? Do I keep it? What's, you know, if they just, here's a prize, okay, everybody assumes you keep that prize.
All right, but if it's a 50-50 raffle, then they realize they have a 50-50 chance of getting the money back also on that.
I don't know if it'd be 50-50. I mean, they have the chance of getting it back. I also, though, I'll go back to this. I think doing a 50-50 raffle, they know there's a good chance they're going to earn more money than they would have doing a raffle, a regular raffle, just because people want to win some money, you know?
Right, and they also know that half of them might give it back, or a percentage, not necessarily a half.
Well, Mark, you're right. Some people will. I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. A lot of texts from the 331. I always give half back, okay? From the 815, keep the money. It should have been kept private. I might give another one from the 608. I might give back a percentage, 10 to 20% maybe. Yeah, you're already given, and I have nothing against giving, and I don't mind if you give it all back. I'm saying I probably would have kept it. But maybe I would have bought some more. I would have bought some more things. Some of the money would have gotten back to the charity anyway. So, you know, I don't need to make a big grand gesture and go, I'm giving all the money back, because that's how benevolent I am. They just, you know, somehow they would have gotten some of that money back. 312-981-7200. Lisa is in Wooddale. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Brian. So great to hear you on Sunday afternoon.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So what do you think of this?
Well, coincidentally, I'm actually working on a dog raffle for my dog rescue, and I do.
What's a dog raffle? Are you giving away a dog?
No.
Okay.
No, my rescue dog is turning 16 on Valentine's Day, and
wow.
It's his fundraiser. I know.
Very nice.
Exciting.
Congratulations. 16 is that's 16. Dog's had a long life.
I'm so blessed. Yeah, and he's doing great.
Excellent.
But at least once a year, I do a 75-25,
okay.
And it's usually money, you know, 75-25, and then there's an additional prize in there, or a couple extra prizes. But I want the people to keep their wins. I don't want them to give it back. If I won 25% of, let's say, $2,000, it would be great. So if they want to donate something back, fine. But they won that. They want it legitimately. Take the money and run.
Okay. Yeah, see, I'm with you, Lisa, and I know there's people who will disagree adamantly. No, you gotta give it all back, but
No, take the money. If you won it, it's a great prize. It was your lucky day. Take the money.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Lisa. And happy
birthday. Great thing.
Happy birthday to your dog.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks. All right. Now, Mary works, has worked for nonprofits, so she's gonna shed a little light on this. Hi, Mary.
Hello. So the bottom line is this. We got this chain going with if you win a 50-50 raffle. Here's the bottom line. It's an individual decision. You win the money. You want to keep it, keep it. You want to give it back, give it back. You want to give it to another not-for-profit, God forbid. You know, somebody finds out you support other places. But here's the bottom line. The best one I ever went to, they were doing a 50-50, and right before they called the numbers, they said, if you win this money, we want you to keep it.
Nice. Okay, then there's absolutely no question.
Yeah, you want to keep it, because there's this unspoken shame, like you can't talk out loud in church. Oh, God forbid you go to a 50-50 raffle drawing and you don't give the money back.
Yes, see, that's what I was talking about, Mary. There's shame. Everybody's looking at you like, are you going to give it back? Are you an evil person because you kept it?
Oh, no. No one ever gives back the money when they win a lottery. So, there we go. So that's all I wanted to tell you.
I appreciate it, Mary. Thanks. And again, yes, if I go to the Hawks game and I win the 50-50 for 20 grand, you can bet I'm keeping that money. I think it's easier for people to rationalize when it's a couple hundred dollars, which, listen, I'm not going to lie to you. I think a couple hundred dollars, that's a good chunk of money to me. I know that's like 8 weeks of salary here for Cody. So he's keeping that $200, right? You're not giving the money back, are you? Steve Dale's calling me. He knows I'm on the air.
I can't believe this is even your opinion.
What, that I'd give it back?
Yeah.
I wouldn't give it back. I said I'm not giving it back.
No, but there'd be... It's surprising to me that it's even a debatable issue. Like, I'm surprised anybody would even think to give it back, because it just seems out of the spirit of the whole thing.
Right. They want you to win.
I planned some fundraisers in college, and I will say, sometimes it's hard to plan a charity event where you end up making more money. Like,
sure.
We would plan a charity dance, and it would end up costing us, $3,000 in the hole for our committee or whatever, and we raise, $500 for this charity. Well,
and
that's great.
You did it wrong.
Yeah, we might as well have just given away the money, but it's hard to structure sometimes. So,
sure.
You know, I get it, but if it's a good charity event, you should trust that the event you're going to has budgeted properly
yes.
So that it doesn't need that money. And, I want donations, but...
The charities always can use the money.
Yeah, but you shouldn't feel obligated because you need to handle their budget or anything.
Right. They're still making that money that they got from the ticket sales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they sold it, whatever, they're getting the 50 of the 50.
They should net out ahead regardless.
Yes,
so
exactly.
Anything you're giving should be seen as extra and not like an obligation. I think if you feel an obligation, I think that's pretty extreme.
That's public pressure, peer pressure.
Too much.
Shame.
Too much peer
Shame.
Pressure.
Shame. Give the money back. How dare you keep the money?
Nah.
Unless it's a big amount of money, then keep it. No, always keep the money. 312-981-7200. We'll get some more of your thoughts on the other side. It's WGN. If you win money at a 50-50 raffle at a charity event, do you give it back? This was a big discussion we had last night. A lot of people are saying, no, you got to keep it. Marilyn wants to weigh in. She's in Naperville. Hi, Marilyn.
Hey there. Just aside from the 50-50 thing, I once saw somebody... Not like a Chinese raffle, but where you pick what you put your tickets in, but they had their ticket pulled for a television. And they said, that's awesome, thank you, but we're going to give back the TV raffle, pick another one, because they just couldn't use it.
Okay.
As far as the 50-50 goes, sometimes there is a huge false humility when they say, Mrs. Jones, we're so happy, thank you so much. Oh, it's nothing, nothing, nothing. I just don't think anybody should know.
Yeah.
I don't think the MC should say anything, and it makes other people pressured. So if they do, they do. If they don't, they don't, and I would not. Just don't let everybody know, because nobody knows how much I donated. Why do they need to know I donated the 50-50 back?
Exactly. Exactly. And, maybe you went there and you really need that money that you won in the 50-50. You used, you were able to donate and help out the cause, but, man, that money will come in handy no matter what amount it is. You shouldn't be shamed into having to give it back. And it shouldn't. And I really...
You know what? I am being hosted by somebody. I'm sitting at their table to fill it. And like you said, I really, really need that money.
Yeah. And you bought the ticket. It's a legit deal. You're not stealing from the charity. You've still made a donation of half of that. So I say go for it. Keep it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Marilyn.
And I hope they made a ton of money last night, regardless.
I think they did. I think I talked to my buddy today to thank him for inviting us, and he said they did very well last night. They did well on everything altogether between the what was left over from the entrance fees, and they said that was the largest amount of participants they have ever had for this event. So they made money there. I don't know what they gave out as cash prizes for the winning team. Not too much, Probably a few $100 altogether for the three winning teams. They made money, a lot of money at the bar, which I don't begrudge anybody. They reasonably priced drinks, which is hard for me to say. And no, yes, Cody, I know the question, did Dry January continue? It did. I did my trivia drinking only water, which made me sharper. Oh, I came through with a couple big... I actually answered a question that the entire room, I may have been the only one who got it right.
What was it?
To the point that one woman actually screamed when I said, they read out what it was, they gave the answer. It was a cake breaker or cake slicer that looked like a fine pronged comb. And I remember we had one at my house when I was growing up. And for some reason, I remembered what it was. And everybody at the table, when I said, that's to slice cake, they were like, no, no, no. I said, please, believe me, if I'm wrong, I will leave. I said, but trust me on this. Put the answer down. It's a cake slicer. And go with it. I said, does anybody have a different answer? No. Then put my answer down. And again, if I'm wrong, I will leave. So... after a couple rounds, they go back and give the answers, and the guy says, oh, and this is a something most people know. It's not a comb. It's not a hair pick. It is a cake breaker. And I was like, yes. And everybody went, somebody said, who got it? And I raised my hand, and someone went, you're S-ing me. And I stood up and went, I am not S-ing you. It was my big moment.
S-ing?
Well, I can't say the word.
I know. I just don't even. Oh, yeah. No, I get it.
Yeah.
I forgot that people use that as a verb.
Oh, they do. Yeah. Now, forever.
You can use any word as anything.
Plus, I also knew the logo for Ritz-Carlton, which nobody else at the table knew, and most of the people in the room did not know.
Is it a cracker?
No, that's Ritz cracker, not Ritz-Carlton. It's like I don't know what it is. It's hard to describe, but I knew it. It was just one of the, I don't know why I've known it, knew it. I've never stayed at a Ritz-Carlton, ever. Now, Motel 6, I would have picked that up right away. I don't know why I know Ritz-Carlton, but I did. I also knew Auntie Anne's Pretzels, and everybody else at the table said it was Wetzel's Pretzels, and so we were wrong. I was outvoted.
What else did you know, Brian?
I knew a lot of things.
I want to know the whole list.
No, those were just the big ones. Those are the ones that stick out. The cake slice.
The last time I went to trivia, an entire category was on the movie Coming to America.
Okay.
Which I've never seen.
How did you get a question right?
The whole exactly. I hate when trivia places do that.
Oh, when they do a whole category on one thing.
Yeah, because you got to announce that ahead of time. I mean, maybe if it's like a Seinfeld or something that most people have seen some of.
But the whole night was about that.
No,
movie?
Just a whole category.
Oh, a whole category. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had what were our categories like? Black and white TV, movies, logos.
Mm.
What am I? Which was again, I was the oldest one at our table by Debbie was a few years behind me, but everybody else was at least 10 years younger than me. A lot of these things were old, and I got them. I knocked them out.
Imagine if you'd had Roger on your team.
Oh, my goodness. I would have been able to get everything. I will say, I got 9 of the 10 black and white TV ones. Roger would have gotten the 10th.
What was the 10th?
The 10th was 77 Sunset Strip. They just showed pictures. And I got 8. A lot of us at the table knew 8. One guy got the one that I was mistaken about. He knew that one, so that was our 9th. And the 10th, we just did not know.
My favorite trivia category is when they play a theme song from something.
Yeah.
Or like a song. The Name That Tune. Tunes are just the best.
Oh, I love those. We used to do those on the Overnight Arcade, remember?
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. We don't do Overnight Arcade anymore because we're not on the Overnight.
We're not on Overnight.
Well, that makes sense of that. A couple more texts. The best 50-50 raffle is Catholic Church Bingo. Give you half the pot, half goes to the parish. Margaret says, it's already split the pot. They already get half the prize. I would keep it to help pay for my school loans. From the 312. If you want a car, would you give it back? Of course not. Same for split the pot. Yes. You know what we need to do? We need to remove the shame from a lot of things in our lives, but mostly the 50-50 raffle.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we got to do. Get rid of the shame. My parents won $15,000 in a church raffle and gave $9,000 back to the church, keeping $1,000 for themselves and $1,000 for each of their 5 children. Well, that was very nice of them, very magnanimous. If it was a church raffle and I won $15,000, I'd give some back to the church, but you're giving to the church every week.
Yeah.
You know, you're always giving to the church. I'm still guessing. They must budget that in. If the prize is $15,000, they must know they're going to make at least $15,000 or more. So they've got that all set up. That's why, that's why some of these raffle tickets are $25, $50, $100. Because you sell a lot more tickets than you're going to give away in prize money. or prizes?
Here's what you do.
What do you do?
You make $500, buy $20 in Bitcoin. And then in 5 years, it'll be worth twice the whole pot, and then you can donate half of that to charity.
Get off your cryptocurrency soapbox.
I'm just
Everybody
saying.
Knows it's a glass house.
Right,
it's a house of cards.
Ethereum. Buy Ethereum. Or Neo.
What?
Or Ripple.
Buy Ripple?
Yeah.
Like a bottle of Ripple?
No.
At the liquor store?
Ripple.
So I could sit on lower Wacker with a paper bag and my cardboard box and just drink Ripple like some wino?
XRP. Ripple, the crypto.
No, that's WKRP.
Nope.
They were in Cincinnati.
That's different. Buy some EOS, maybe. Listen, I got hot tips. Do not take financial advice from this program or legal advice.
Brian,
or really any advice.
Brian, if I win, I'm keeping it. Would you give all the money back if you went to the Super Bowl pool at the church or at the bar? Absolutely not, 847. As a Lutheran, I love Catholic Church bingo. Very, very nice. People weighing in. The first 50-50 I ever saw at a charity event, the winner gave it back. It ruined my night. I wrestled with my feelings all night, and I stopped playing 50-50 at charity events. See, and that's what they don't want you to do. They want you to play. They want you to keep buying, you know, 6 tickets for $5. All right, give me 20. Give me $20. Here you go. Boom. Everybody dropping a 20. They're raking in money hand over fist. You gotta like it. Oh, my goodness. On the other side of the news, we're going to talk about a very, very cool event for women. It is the Mocktails and Conversation. The moderator of that event, Maria Mozafar, will join us, and we'll tell you all about that. We'll do that after the news, which comes your way after this on WGN. Me Too and Time's Up and the women's marches. Thankfully, all eyes are turning to women and equal rights, as they should have been for a long time. Equal pay. Trying to get gender equality, which we've been a lot of people have been waiting for a long, long time. Hopefully, they won't have to keep waiting. Civil rights lawyer and moderator Maria Mozafar is with me. She is moderating a very cool event coming up called Mocktails and Conversation. Welcome. We're glad you're here. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little about yourself. How did you get involved in the obviously as a woman in the law? You're involved in making sure there's gender equality and keeping things going. But how did you start to become more of an activist?
Well, you know, I've always wanted to be a lawyer. I think since I was young, we identify things that we're passionate about. I was always passionate about advocating for people who could not advocate for themselves.
Okay.
And so it always took different roles, you know, whether it be as a younger person being involved in student government, being student body president, or in college advocating for individuals that were kind of ignored by the administration and so on. So civil rights has always been a passion of mine because the majority of individuals that suffer civil rights abuses are individuals that don't have power.
Right.
And those are the ones that really need to be helped and advocated for. As far as an activist, I think everyone could be an activist in their own way. You know, you can take whatever career path you have and make it more powerful for a larger community. And so I think my work just lends itself to that.
So besides the law, you also started the Skinless Project. Explain to people what that is.
So the Skinless Project, which actually has a tagline, "We are more than skin deep," is a global empowerment platform for women. And it's really a way for women around the world to be inspired by other stories and examples of how women are doing really well and the changes they're making in their communities. You know, a lot of the times when I work with grassroots organizations and lobbying and legislative consulting, I see so many times that women are at the forefront of doing this type of work.
Right.
And what I realized many times that when it came to press conferences and when it came to giving recognition or a pat on the back, whatever you might call it, the women were absent.
Huh.
And it made me wonder, you know, where are the women? They're the ones who are doing all the heavy lifting here. And so this kind of is interesting because you can tie it to the Women's March because people were surprised that all these women came out.
Right.
Well, women have been doing this for so long, and now finally they're together and marching and showing everybody.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask you because, you know, for a lot of people, last year when the first Women's March, it was like, wow, this is all starting right now. Well, it didn't start last year. It's been starting on a much smaller level. But what do you think opened the floodgates to say, hey, listen, ladies, we need to all, now's the time. I mean, the election of President Trump
right.
seemed to spur that, but there had to be a lot of other simmering issues that finally, you know what, we've had enough. Now's the time that we all need to unite and let people know that, listen, This is important.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I think majority of women knew that advocacy was very important, and they've been doing it in their own communities a lot. And that's why these were leaders and leaders of organizations that were able to literally organize all their members and communities to come out. So the woman power was already there, mm-hmm. and it was just ready to organize in March. But the key thing is, you know, very clearly, the catalyst was the election of the current president sitting mm-hmm. in the White House, because for the first time, we saw a president that specifically talked about sexual assault, talked about women in a certain way, and now was representing the country to the rest of the world. And so the women understood very clearly that this is not a representation that they want for themselves and for their daughters. And what was interesting is that if you see the dialogue between women during that time, specifically between Trump supporters and non-Trump supporters, the Trump supporters who were women would not give an excuse or ignore Trump's statements. They would simply say that's just boy talk. And so there's a difference in mentality. You know, there's
Were you surprised by that? Because as the husband of a woman and the father of a daughter, I would think from the outside, I would think all women would be behind this. But as you mentioned, there weren't. And that it surprised me as a man. How did it surprise you,
you? Well, what it actually indicated to the rest of the world that was understanding that this was problematic, that there is a very subtle oppression that people are not recognizing within their households and their neighborhoods and the media campaigns that consistently tell women that some things are just locker room talk and boy talk and that they're okay. You know, these are men and sons and brothers, and they are responsible for how they contribute to society. And if they talk about women, the beings that actually give birth to them, for them to be able to walk on this earth in this way, and it's considered boy talk, I think we are severely oppressed.
Well, and it's funny, those same people wouldn't talk about their moms or their sisters that way, but if you're a random woman walking down the street or a coworker, there's a disconnect where it's okay if I talk about them this way, but I can't talk about these women that way because they're, you know, they're my family.
Right, and it's the same thing of being the same person that you are in public versus private. It's the accountability issue. It's the whole concept of hidden racism. You know, I have a black friend, I have a Latino friend. Well, I wouldn't say this about African Americans or Latinos to the outside of the house.
Right.
I'm saying this to you. You know, this is what people say to each other. And so what happens is, who are you? What are your values? What do you stand for? If you stand for values that are consistent, then you should be the same person in public and in private.
Well, while the Skinless Project talks about being more than just skin deep, you're also the author of a book, More Than Pretty, which, again, talks to women about, you know, listen, we're more than just one thing.
Absolutely. So the full title of the book is More Than Pretty, How to Live a Life of Substance in an Artificial World. And I specifically wrote it because I believe that right now, women, specifically now, you know, with the march occurring, but women are understanding their power, and they are also understanding that they have a purpose larger than themselves. Now, throughout history and in society, you will see so many distractions that hit us every day, whether it be reality TV, mm-hmm. whether it be consumer-driven industries that tell us that once you hit 30 or 29, you need a new face cream. You're not smart enough. You're not good enough. This happens across the board. The messages are there. And women need to understand, for beings that are able to give birth, for beings that are raising children, that are multitasking and doing such amazing things, that they're much more than pretty. And it's actually a false narrative to make them seem that they're not. And so this book is a reminder to them to avoid all the distractions and find their purpose.
Now, you're moderating this event, which is put on by the United States of Women,
mm-hmm.
Which started right here in Chicago, right? Or part of it started mm-hmm. in Chicago. What is the United States of Women?
So the United States of Women is actually an organization to uplift and empower women. It's actually started with the leadership of the First Ladies, Michelle Obama. They created a council on women and girls in the White House. And this was actually an organization and a summit that came up to talk about women's empowerment issues. And now it's been continued. And the two women in leadership are actually Tina Chen, which is a former chief of staff for Michelle Obama, and Valerie Jarrett, who's a close advisor to President Obama. So, and now they're continuing their work. You know, they're empowering women. They're providing resources for them to learn about leadership and how to run for office. And women are now ready to really advocate in the public sphere.
The event is Mocktails and Conversation. It's to discuss how women can spark change in 2018. Food and food will be provided. The mocktails will be there. If you want information, UnitedStateOfWomen.org is where you can get all that. I want to talk to you. We're going to take a quick break. I want to talk to you about how women can spark change in 2018. You know, my daughter is about to graduate from college, and she's, you know, she's very active in all sorts of things. And then my wife, because a lot of us feel powerless. Mm-hmm. We look at the system and go, well, you know, there's other people in charge. How can we mm-hmm. really make a change? Maria Mosafar is here. She is moderating the event, which is Mocktails and Conversation. It is happening on February 10th. At the Low Res Studio, 1821 West Hubbard. Again, if you want tickets and information, go to UnitedStateOfWomen.org. More with Maria on the other side. It's 720 WGN. We are talking with Maria Mosafar. She is a civil rights attorney, moderator. She does all sorts of work. She is also the moderator of Mocktails and Conversation, an event being put on by United State of Women. It's Saturday, February 10th. It'll be held at Low Res Studio, 1821 West Hubbard Street. Doors open at 11. The program begins at noon, and the Q&A starts at 12:45. Some big name people will be on this. Cook County State's Attorney Kimberly Fox is going mm-hmm. to be there. As you mentioned, the former Chief of Staff, Tina Chen, former First Lady Michelle Obama is there. So they're on the panel. You are moderating this, and it's all about how women can spark change in 2018. Mm-hmm. We don't want to give away the whole thing, but how can women spark change? How can all any of us spark change in 2018?
Well, there's other than voting, which right. definitely should vote.
Yeah, if you don't vote.
But there's three key things that I would state. You know, number one, you have to pick a lane. You have to find out what your skill is. You may be an artist, you may be a writer, you may be, a storyteller, you may be a mathematician. What is it that you do that you're really good at that you can actually use to advocate for other people and for a larger community? So pick your lane, find out what your skill is, and get rid of the expert syndrome concern that people have, you know,
I have to be an expert.
No, you become an expert by hustling, by learning, by doing. So do the work, pick your lane and do the work. Number two is your elected officials, you know, whether it be at the local level, down in Springfield, your local level county board seats, or your congressional representatives. Find out who they are and pick an issue in your community around you that makes you unsettled. Literally, that you watch on the news and you're like, why is this happening? You know, this makes no sense. It doesn't make sense to me. And follow your gut. And if you feel concerned about something, contact your legislator and tell them that you want to meet with them and that you want to discuss what you can do to help, to change where the issue is at. And that really is persistence, persistence, persistence.
I was going to say, you've done a lot of legislative consulting. Is it difficult for an average citizen, even if I'm a voter and I elected this person, is it hard for me to get in front of my legislator and say, listen, this is on our block, this is happening, and it's not right?
Absolutely. It's not difficult as long as you know what you want to say.
Okay.
You know, that's what I always tell people. Don't worry about, well, I don't even know anybody. I've never met them. They probably have a long list. My email is going to go under, you know, show up at their door. You know, call them, cold call them, show up at their office, say, I really, really care about this issue. Nothing is more important to an elected official than constituents that care and votes. Mm-hmm. And if you do both of those things and if you represent that, that's when they'll open the door for you. And let's remember that they work for you.
Right.
They work for you. You know, you're not as somebody just waiting in the winds to try to see, can you please see us? We don't live with a monarchy. You
right.
know? So let's understand that and let's take ownership of that. So persistence, persistence, persistence. That goes for anything in life, right?
Sure.
You can't give up hope. And number three is, I was just in Dixon, Illinois, talking about this to a group of people in Dixon. Majority of voters voted for Trump.
Sure.
And the individuals that I was speaking to, they were saying, how can we talk to people about what's going on? How can we convince people on polar opposite sides politically how to get along? And I told them, let's get to the heart of the matter. Let's talk about those tough issues that divide this country. And one of them, for example, being the fear of demographic change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's driving this political rhetoric? You know, the issue between races and the growing ethnicities that are coming into this country.
Right.
Let's talk about what scares people. So I would say break the echo chamber. Have those uncomfortable conversations with people that don't agree with you to find out what the other side is thinking and see where you can mobilize and come together to advocate for an issue that you do agree on.
And so, see, that's as much as we know how important that is probably the most difficult thing of all the things you've listed so far, trying to have civil conversations with people who believe they have to stay entrenched. No matter what side they're on, there's the perception of weakness if I give a little bit. No matter who you are, if I give a little, I'm selling out my beliefs.
Yeah, and that's why I always say it is the heart of the matter. Mm-hmm. Because the heart of the matter is the toughest. But we have to get to that, right? We have to have those tough conversations. And part of my job is also as a mediator. So I talk to people how to get from one side to the other and get to the middle. And I will tell you, throughout my mediation experiences, whether it be divorce or police brutality, employment discrimination, it comes down to dignity, human dignity. If you are convinced that your side is right, understand that the other person feels the same and give them their due respect and their dignity. Let them speak, hear them out. And once you do that and you validate their reality, see, my reality may be different than yours.
Sure.
Maybe I have met tons of minorities and tons of ethnicities, tons of Muslims, Spanish-speaking individuals that are hardworking. I see them every day doing their work and are incredible. I don't listen to Fox News from morning to evening. I get a lot of different outlets giving me my news. For somebody else, that may not be the case.
Right.
So I respect that reality. I understand that. And now I need to engage them into my reality for them to see both sides.
And when you come up against people who will not, like if you're a woman trying to convince somebody, listen, this is not just us being mad for no reason. We're, you know, we have concerns that are valid, and no matter what you say, that some people you can't change their mind. What do you do when you run up against those people?
So there are people that will not change their mind, whether it be fact or fiction.
Right.
For that individual, there's really not much you can say, because the person that is willing to believe fiction is also not willing to get up and actually do something.
Right.
Right? Because fiction is their reality. But people that listen to facts will actually be swayed. So understand the distinction. Identify the difference in two individuals when you're speaking to them. And then some of them, you just have to cut your losses, you know? But I will say, I believe in diversity. I believe in the fact that demographic change is really great for this country, that people together are much stronger. And I have seen people change their minds all mm-hmm. the time. Yeah. So I believe people can be swayed. And I believe in the good nature of every individual. People are out for themselves, to protect themselves, to have better lives. And we all have that in common.
Sure, exactly. Nobody wants their life to get worse.
Exactly.
And I don't think deep down anybody wants anybody else's life to get worse. My life being better does not necessarily mean that your life can't be better. They're not mutually exclusive.
It's not a competition.
Right. Mm-hmm. Everybody can raise up. So if people come to Mocktails and Conversation on the 10th, how does it work? You're moderating it, and Tina Chen will be there, and Kimberly Fox. What can they expect?
So there will be lunch, as you stated. So
yes,
people
listen.
Will be fed.
People like to eat.
But you know what's really important about this is that you have these two incredible women, Tina Chen and Kimberly Fox, who have been in powerful positions, in the highest points of power in the state and the federal government, and they have seen how power dynamics works. They understand how legislation works. They understand how individuals in different situations have advocated for themselves. And they can give really key critical insight on how you make change, advocate, and how you stand up for yourself and stand up for others. So this is something that's an opportunity for you to get up close and personal to change makers in this country. Many times, like you stated, an individual says, well, who am I? You know, it's so far out of reach.
Yeah.
You know, this is an opportunity for you to understand it's not far out of reach. It's very much into your reach. Come and listen, be inspired. There's going to be Q&A. We want to hear from you. There are brilliant people, intelligent, amazing people that want to be heard, and we want to hear from them as well. And this is just a stepping stone.
Well, and it's a wonderful forum to give people who might not think they have a voice, no matter how successful they may be in their chosen field or in their community. If you don't think you can get to the people in the seat of power, you're going to just walk away. But this is great, because you've got people from the seat of power saying, no, listen, this is how you get to them. These are the avenues you take, and change can happen. It might take a while. Speaking of that, are you encouraged? You must be, about the increased number of women who are now running for office, statewide and across the nation. over, you know, looking ahead to the midterms and everything else?
Absolutely. I actually just moderated a candidates forum on Friday, and I'm moderating one on Tuesday, and the diversity of the individuals and the women was incredible, you know, and I'm so inspired by it, and it just goes to show you that you just need a catalyst. That's right. All it is, you know. I always tell people to go back to when they were younger and when they read stories about the little tugboat that said, I think I can.
Yep.
I mean, that fictional story was written for a reason. You know, you think you can, you think you can. You keep telling yourself, and I will tell you, you will do it. And that's exactly what happened. There are individuals who were upset, then they marched, then they ran, and then, as we see in Alabama, they won.
Exactly.
And that's what happens.
What would you say, and you know there's still a group of men predominantly who, old school, for lack of a better term, who are like, listen, these women, they're trying to take everything from us. It goes back, I think, to what we were talking about before. Just because one person or group of people is trying to better themselves, that doesn't mean they're trying to denigrate another group. It just, it's time to even things out, right?
Well, it's interesting. We had this discussion in Dixon, too. Where does this fear come from, that when you bring somebody else from the outside, that you see someone not like yourself, whether it be a woman or a minority or anything like that? Why do you have this fear? And what I always tell people that is that what it really translates into is projection. Right. Because what you feel is like, well, if I was in that position and if I felt marginalized and I got my power, I'd want someone else to feel marginalized too. But that's not how it works.
Right, exactly.
That's not how it works. Because if you see refugees crossing in ships and you see that they've actually lost lives, that there's babies in the water, you think they actually lost babies in the water to come and marginalize someone else?
No.
They're here to get their bills paid. They're here to give people a chance. They're here to live beautiful, happy lives like all of us. And they want the best for everybody else as well.
The event is Mocktails and Conversation, the moderator, Maria Mozafar. It is Saturday, February 10th, taking place at Low Res Studio, 1821 West Hubbard. If you want tickets, go to unitedstateofwomen.org. If you want to learn more about Maria, you can go to mariamozafar.com. Very nice to meet you. Good luck with the event, and I hopefully we'll talk again.
Thank you so much.
Take care. All right. It's news time. We'll do that right after this on WGN. See, that's what happens when you play the Pet Shop Boys. You get all sorts of weirdness happening. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Whenever there's a story. I don't know. I couldn't tell if that song was going to stop. Cody, I didn't know what was going on.
No, I just hit the button that said Pet Shop Boys. I don't even know what they sound like.
I don't know.
Like.
There was like rocket sounds and things going on.
Oh, don't even buy your dogs and cats at a pet store anyway.
Never. Yeah, you don't want Pet Shop Boys, Pet Shop Animals,
yeah,
nothing.
Yeah, that's not the message.
Listen, whenever there is an animal-related story in the news, I only know one man to call. Steve Dale, the host of Steve Dale's Pet World here on WGN. You can read all about him at stevedale.tv. I'm always grateful when you come in. So we're going to talk about Delta's move, but I'm always excited because you've done this with me a couple times. You have breaking news.
Yes, it happens.
Big breaking pet news.
Yeah, your timing was amazing.
Well,
you sent me a text. Can you come on to talk about the Delta Airlines thing, which we'll do.
Yes, but you said, hey, wait, I have another story.
Yeah. So the Animal Welfare League of Chicago, two locations, one in the city on the south side, an underserved area in many ways, and another in Chicago Ridge, a suburb of Chicago. They've been around for a very long time. They're a needed facility. Yeah. They're open intake, which means by their own policy, they take anything.
Oh, really?
Much.
Okay.
So you have a dog or cat, you want to give up, nearly always they will accept that animal. Sometimes they'll have to immediately euthanize that animal because it is so sick and people may not have had financial means to care for it.
Right.
I've actually witnessed, and I wrote about this in my blog more than once, a family coming in or someone coming in with little puppies all have parvovirus, so far gone there would be nothing that could be done to save these puppies. So their numbers, because we look at numbers in the animal welfare world, are not as impressive as, say, a prestigious no-kill facility on the north side of Chicago.
Right.
You know,
they're doing the job that a lot of those shelters either can't do or don't want to do.
Absolutely.
But somebody has, somebody unfortunately has
to do it.
That's
the thing, you know, and the problem isn't on their side. It's, okay, why are people giving up these animals? Why are people not vaccinating for parvo, et cetera? Having said all that, you still need to be, must be, and there is no excuse not to be a humane facility. Mm-hmm. And questions have now come out increasingly, and I've seen the records for this, where I am now concerned and calling into question some of their policies, some of what they historically do. It greatly concerns me. It makes me very sad. One of our dogs is from the Animal Welfare League, actually. So I am so sad. It's a blog post I didn't want to write. Here's one example.
What's going on? Yeah, what's going on that is drawing such attention?
Well, conditions that aren't clean enough consistently, that sort of thing that you frequently read about. But more, maybe more to the point, are mistakes that are being made there that animals are paying a price for, allegedly. There are all sorts of allegations which the facility denies, and I don't know from where I sit whether they are true or not. But sometimes where there is smoke, there is at least a little bit of fire.
Yeah.
And they do have paperwork that I've read, I've seen it, I posted some of it. For example, implementing a treatment for dogs with upper respiratory infection that I thought, this can't be right. So I showed a veterinarian who said it is so not right that she believes personally that a veterinarian who administered that could be disciplined by the board that does that for the state of Illinois.
Are they suspecting that it's a matter of wanton negligence or overcrowding, for lack of a better term? What do they think is the cause of this?
I don't know the exact answer. I mean, they may be a bit overburdened. Having said that, there is never an excuse for what I've seen. And
Now, is this at both facilities?
Yes.
Okay, so it's happening allegedly at both
facilities. Yeah, and the Chicago facility is run by an angel. Her name is Diane, and I don't know how she does it. They are so underfunded for the Chicago facility on South Wabash. They have so few resources. She has been doing this valiantly, amazingly, heroically now for years. And I've said publicly and privately, so on top of everything else, and I'm saying it again, why doesn't she have the resources?
Right.
And I don't know the answer to that. They're a private facility. At the end of the day, to some degree, they can do what they want, but they also have to answer to donors.
Sure. And that's part of the issue, where you've got to answer to the money. So maybe, and I don't know if this is the case, maybe some costs get cut. But if you're a veterinarian, unless they're only getting veterinarians who, quite frankly, aren't that good, because maybe there's not the money.
I'm in no position to say that.
No, I understand that. I understand that, but just logically, it's like, well, how are you making these drastic mistakes?
What I've seen at other facilities, I'm not talking about Chicago Animal Welfare League of Chicago at the moment, but what I've witnessed at other facilities are people playing veterinarian who aren't.
Oh.
Now, I can't speak to the case there. I really don't know. All I know is some of the paperwork that I've gotten, images that people have sent me. It's just sad, it's shocking, and it's inexcusable, and there's got to be a way to stop it. And, you know, these things, ultimately, the board of directors, you know, they start at the top. I am on boards. They start at the top, the executive director of the facility. What I suggested is cameras in the back rooms where people can actually go online 24/7. Technology allows that to happen now. And if they say, their defense to me is, well, we want to be transparent. Okay, then be transparent.
Right.
That's one idea. And the other is, they have plausible explanations for some of this. So talk about it and talk with the community about it in an open forum. And those are my two personal recommendations. If someone else has one, that's fine. All I do know is something needs to be done, no matter which side is right and which side is wrong. They've lost public trust.
Right, and as you said, these are facilities that are needed. It's not like, well,
they're
we can shut
needed.
Them down.
Yes.
Then what? then
and
what
they
happens?
Do great things. I mean, you know, there are many of us, I say us because I have a dog from there.
Yeah.
There are many of us who are thrilled that we were able to get our dogs or cats from the Animal Welfare League of Chicago. There are too many stories coming out of animals that have been adopted out in unhealthy conditions, reportedly so. But many of us, me included, perfectly healthy animal adopted to me and changed our life, and I'm thrilled with it, you know, and I'm very grateful. They are needed because without the Animal Welfare League of Chicago being an open admission facility, taking in the numbers that they do in Chicago Ridge and Chicago, two locations, the only other two of note that do that are Anti-Cruelty Society of Chicago,
okay,
and by law, the city's organization, Chicago Animal Care and Control, the municipal facility.
Right.
So if Animal Welfare League of Chicago tomorrow shut its doors, these organizations would be overwhelmed, and incidentally, they have kind of shut their doors because of dog flu.
Sure.
Now, they're doing the right thing in doing that, and Anti-Cruelty had it happen, and Chicago Animal Care and Control had it happen. Other facilities have seen it happen all over the nation,
mm-hmm,
where dog flu, once it gets into a facility, these dogs are going to get sick. So the only thing they can do is control what they have, wait till the dogs get better, treat them.
So they stop intake and everything during these?
Yeah, and that's actually the appropriate thing to do.
Yeah, well, it's again, if you want to read all about it, you can go to stevedown.tv. Steve's blog, you just published it a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
So I mentioned to you, I saw a little blurb on this the other day on the news. They were talking about it, and I'm not sure if it was the woman you were talking about who runs the South.
I'm sure.
The South Side one, but... You know, she's trying to defend what's going on there, and it's tough. But I like your idea about cameras. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't cost that much. But if the funding is that tight, any bit of expenditure
is
tough.
Well, then they shouldn't pay for it.
Right.
So
somebody else should.
Yeah, the advocates that are saying this place has got to be fixed. They can fix it, and you can go online now and do a GoFundMe sort of thing.
Sure.
These cameras aren't that much. They could raise the money for it. The thing is that if they raise the money for it and the facility isn't willing to put them up in the right places and make them available 24/7 for the public to see, there's no point.
Right. And so if it is, as you said, this is not the case with the Animal Welfare League, as far as you know, but you've seen in the past people who aren't vets playing vets, that... I would imagine that's got to be step number one. You got to make sure that the people on your staff are qualified and dedicated to be there, right?
I've seen it. So people need, this is basic 101, they need job descriptions.
Yes,
and need to do what they are trained to do, but not, you know, over time people become a little emboldened. It's human nature. Again, I don't know. I don't work at Animal Welfare League. I've just heard from people what I've heard. I don't volunteer there. I've been there, you know, but I don't know the insides one way or the other of what's going on, except the paperwork I've received, the images I've received, and that is what I'm commenting on, and that's what concerns me.
All right, again, go to stevedown.tv, read Steve's latest post. It's all about what's going on at the Animal Welfare League, both locations, South Side of Chicago and in Chicago Ridge. Let's take a quick break. I want to talk to you quick about this new policy on Delta.
Let's go fly a plane.
They're cracking down on so-called emotional support animals. So I want to get your thoughts on that. And then we'll mention dog flu again, because just like the regular flu, the people flu, different strains, of course, but the dog flu is very, very prevalent. So a lot to get to. Steve Dale's here. It's WGN. Steve Dale is here. If you're just joining us, Steve just wrote a brand new story on his blog, stevedale.tv, about the Animal Welfare League. If you've been watching the news the last few days, you've seen some mentions about the alleged problems that are going on at the two locations. If you want the inside scoop, go to Steve's website, stevedale.tv, and read all about that.
And you only said scoop because you're talking to me. So we heard the cat spot
cat
litter
spot, yes,
commercial. What does he say? 888. What? No.
www. Oh, man. So directors would be very upset with him.
I know. But he's got a great voice.
He does.
I interviewed him. He will be on the show this coming Sunday.
Oh, very nice. February 4th.
Uh-huh. As we talk cat litter.
6:30?
Uh-huh.
All right, 6:30.
Central time.
Yes, of course. That's when Steve's on. All right. I saw this story, and of course I thought of you. Delta is moving to ban some phony support animals. Where do you, now I understand they're service animals, and that's a different thing. Service animals and support animals are different, correct?
They are, but the problem is who knows that?
Well, I do, because I just mentioned
you
it and
do.
I did some research. But,
I suppose you do.
So that's why I'm asking you, because I knew the answer. I'm like an attorney. I'm not going to ask you a question I don't really know the answer to. But, you know, Delta is seeing some things. A service animal goes through extensive training. These animals are they obey. They know exactly what to do. They could pretty much do things on their own. They could even fly the plane at some point.
And they could do your show, yes.
Yes. Well, listen, a service monkey could do this program. And don't think I haven't tried to take a few Sundays off and bring in a service monkey. But
these, that would be me.
This emotional support animals, there's, you know, you can get those certified online in some cases.
Well, you could even get service dogs or other service animals certified online, and that's the thing.
That's the thing. So you've got animals who are attacking other passengers, and you've got, you know, people bringing on cockatoos and pigs and wombats and all sorts of things.
So the Americans for Disabilities Act, where this all began, and there's a separate slice that is just referred to as an Airlines Act that is a different, it's not a part of that, but it refers to animals on an airplane. So you've got two sort of types of legislation there, both federal, that could not have envisioned the internet doing what it does today.
Right.
And people going online and for $35 finding a quote unquote medical professional who will sign your animal off unseen as a service dog even, let alone a comfort dog or an emotional support animal. And that's the other thing, that the terminology comfort dog, which I might have even began actually in a story that I did, emotional support animal, those terms didn't even exist back then.
Yes.
And also the general public, there's a fine line and a fuzzy line defining what is, well, to those of us there isn't a line. There is a line. We know exactly what that is. But for others, what's the difference? I mean, if we stop people on the street here on Michigan Avenue and say, what's the difference between a service dog and emotional support animal? They won't know. But there is a medical definition that defines a difference.
Well,
so,
give that medical definition if you would.
An emotional support animal helps people to feel better on a day-to-day basis.
That's every pet, though, isn't it?
To some degree, yes.
Okay.
And a service animal actually provides a specific service rather than broadly helping people to feel better. I'm not discounting the value of emotional support animals at all. I don't mean to minimize that.
Right.
But that's different than a service animal who may, for example, you've had Vicky Santo on the show, right?
Sure.
Talking about
the dogs
the Ron
that can
Santo,
sniff out diabetes.
Mm-hmm, Diabetic Alert Foundation.
Yes.
And those dogs do exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
Or a dog that can say, aha, you are about to have a heart palpitation, mm-hmm. or a dog that is with you and actually minimizes the effects of migraine headaches, or dogs that provide a physical service helping, say, those with physical disabilities to get around. And the list goes on and on and on. And that includes guide dogs that have been around forever that help people that are visually impaired. There are hearing dogs that help people that can't hear very well. So
let's get to how it's being exploited, because if you're traveling with a pet, just your pet, you got to pay like $125. If I'm traveling with my emotional support animal in my crazy air quotes, hey, guess what? That's free.
Yep.
So do I really need emotional support, or do I need that $125?
Well, and the airlines, more than $125 very often. So these airlines, to some extent, have done it to themselves. And the system has done it to itself. So if I have a dog, how much does your larger dog weigh?
About 90 pounds.
Okay, so that dog, no matter how far that dog inhales, is not going to be able to fit in the seat in front of you, right?
No.
In a little carrier.
No, he is not. He needs his own seat, and probably two, because he's very lazy and likes to lay down.
Would you want to have your dog travel? Should you have the need to travel or want to travel with your dog on an airplane, would that dog be able to travel in cargo?
I wouldn't want him to travel in cargo.
Exactly my point. So this is the only way around that, except driving to your destination, I suppose. The other thing is the financial burden, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. There is a additional cost. I wish it was only $125. The airlines have gone up, and I believe it's more than that now.
Okay.
So there's that. And if people can get around it, of course they will. And now we've got these definitions that are yo-yoing all over the place. So can a pig be an emotional support animal? Well, maybe, I suppose. Should that 400-pound pig be on an airplane?
No.
I'm thinking probably not. Should an animal like a cockatoo that can't be house-trained, cockatoos are brilliant,
sure,
but they're not house-trained, is it fair to have that animal on a plane?
No, not unless it's an all-pirate flight. That would be the only reason. Let's take this call, Steve, because
sure.
Phil is in Arlington Heights, and he is a therapy dog tester. Hi, Phil.
Hey, Phil.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. What do you think?
Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a tester for a therapy dog group, and we are very sensitive to this fraud issue.
Mm-hmm.
It does get out of control very easily. People want to bring their animals to on restaurants and planes and all kinds of things. However, that being said, I think there is a fine line where some sort of a strange animal could provide support to, let's say, a military person with PTSD, you know, that kind of thing. If they're certified by a psychiatrist to have a bona fide issue and that animal does provide support for that person, then technically I think that does qualify as a service animal, but I'm not sure. Maybe the guest could comment on that.
The guest can. Thank you, Phil. It can qualify as a service animal, absolutely. But does that animal, if we're talking pet turkey, which has literally happened,
right, does it belong on a plane?
Right.
And that's the case. There was a 70-pound dog that bit the passenger next to him because, as I mentioned before, and you can confirm this or deny it, Steve, service animals go through so much. They are, the training that they go through, they're trained. It's inbred in them. And if you've seen service animals, they don't respond to anybody except the person that they're supposedly
they
helping.
They are truly service
yes.
animals. Absolutely true. Yes. And overall, I do want to say this, overall, I would rather have, and I have, had dogs or a cat sit yeah. next to me, you know, under the seat in a carrier,
sure.
on a plane than
some
a
of the humans?
Little kid.
Oh, wow. Oh,
whoa.
And on that note, we say thank you, Steve
I'm
Dale.
I'm in trouble now. I got
to
go.
If you want, if you have any comments on Steve Dale's commentary, please go to Steve Dale TV, stevedale.tv, rather, and you can leave them there. Also, while you're there leaving horrible comments about his children's comments, you can read his scoop. This is breaking news on the Animal Welfare League. I'm always thankful and grateful that you came
Thank
in.
You.
Thank you for coming in. You're always a font of information. So, and I mean that sincerely.
Thank
I'm
you.
Not just joking.
Thank
so
you.
It's
Thank
always
you,
good to always good to talk to you, Steve Dale. You can read him stevedale.tv. Hear him here Sunday mornings at 6:30 on Steve Dale's Pet World. A lot going on. Thank you so much. I will talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's do this. And it's news time. WGN. Why are we afraid of messages that we don't agree with? In a country where we are constantly talking about freedom of speech, I have a right to talk, I have a right to talk. Why do some people want to stifle that right because they don't agree with the message? Why am I asking you this? Well, because it was announced this week that business professor Luigi Zingales at the University of Chicago had invited Steve Bannon. Oh, you know Steve Bannon. You know Steve Bannon, former Breitbart, head of Breitbart, former counselor of President Trump, the man who was exiled, Sloppy Steve, the president called him. You know him. Well, they've invited him to speak at the University of Chicago to come in, and he's going to be part of a debate. They invited him to campus. It is a debate. So, people, of course, lost their minds. Oh, my goodness. And at the University of Chicago, where, you know, listen, I wasn't smart enough to get into the University of Chicago. A lot of smart people are there. Our own former great colleague, Milton Rosenberg, professor at the University of Chicago. Some big minds down there. However, some big minds don't want to hear opinions that differ from their own. And so, there was some anti-Bannon protesters and professors at the University of Chicago were saying, this is not right. We should not allow Steve Bannon to speak. I could not disagree more. If there is a message that you find repugnant or even slightly irritating, no matter what your level of disagreement is, you need to hear that message. And the only way to really defeat a message like that or to argue a message like that is to let a person speak and then speak to them. You listen and then you speak. And when it happens at, you know, it happens in Berkeley, people go, oh, well, you know, those freaky Californians, those people, they're hippies, they're nuts, they don't want, they're going to be violent. No, no, no. Now it's happening at the University of Chicago. Hopefully they still come. The university is standing by this invitation and saying, yes, we are going to allow Steve Bannon to come and speak, which they should. And if you are, listen, I don't agree with anything Steve Bannon says. But do I think he should be able to speak at the University of Chicago? Of course. Why not? What are you afraid of? Are you afraid that somehow he's going to say something and make you flip your beliefs? Well, then your beliefs probably aren't that strong. Are you afraid that if we give him a forum, it's not a free forum. He's not coming to just bloviate for an hour and a half. He's coming to be part of a discussion. And you figure the moderators are going to ask him tough questions. You can hope that he loses the debate and discredits his opinions even more, which would make you happy. But why on earth would you want to stop this? Again, the University of Chicago has a long tradition, this from an editorial in the Tribune, of valuing free speech. And this is something that I think is lost on a lot of people when they go to college. College is a place of ideas and learning. So you're supposed to learn how to think. You're supposed to learn how to make judgments on your own. You're supposed to be exposed to uncomfortable thoughts and ideas because that helps you either fight them or challenge your own beliefs and either make them stronger or change them. But it's not a place to go and be coddled. It's not a place to go and sit in a room with people who only have the same ideas as you and be in a vacuum. What good is that? Because at some point you're going to leave college. And I guarantee you when you get out of college, there's going to be a lot of people who have ideas that are different than yours. Some of them might be very, very upsetting. But if you've learned how to think, if you've learned how to discuss, if you've learned how to debate, then, hey, guess what? You'll survive. It'll be fine. No boogeyman is going to come in and get inside your head and make you think things contrary to what you really believe. But you have to be able to expose yourself to that. So, this debate, the debate is all about the economic benefits of globalization and immigration. And it could be Bannon's first big high-profile appearance since he was ousted from not only the White House, but from Breitbart. So this is a perfect opportunity to listen to what this guy has to say, as whether you believe it or not, whether you're a fan of Steve Bannon or not, this message should be out there. Because either he's going to lose horribly in a debate, or he's going to make some points, and you might go, boy, I don't like this guy, but he had a point on that one thing, so maybe I need to rethink my blanket mentality of you know, covering things. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in on that. You look, Cody, like you have something percolating under those blonde locks of yours.
I always look like I have something percolating.
Do you in fact in this point have something percolating?
I actually agree with you 100%. 100,000%.
Really? My
favorite.
I don't think that's possible.
So you know, in the beautiful Tribune Tower lobby, they've got quotes etched in the stone.
If you've never been to Tribune Tower, you need to come before it turns into condominiums.
Yeah,
you need to come. I actually need to walk around a little more because it is a fascinating building. But to your point,
I love the lobby, and my favorite quote is the one that I walk underneath. It's right over the archway, and it says, "I do not agree with a word you say, but I will defend to my death your right to say it."
Yes.
By Voltaire. And I don't think that everyone should be allowed to say everything, but surely if the University of Chicago purports to be a place of intelligence,
a hotbed of thinking,
learned minds, if they're so smart, then what are they afraid of exactly?
Right. What are these? But what surprised me is, the students surprised me, but not to the extent of the faculty who are raging against this. And the faculty actually was making a point where, well, this is a quote. This is a quote. His presence on campus sends a chilling message not only to students, staff, and faculty at the university, but also to the young people who attend the University of Chicago Charter School and Laboratory School, and to the primarily black neighbors who surround the university. He's not coming in with an occupying force. He's one guy who has ideas that I completely disagree with. But he's one guy in a debate. They're not sanctioning what he believes in. They're bringing him in to argue his point. And on the other side of that debate will be someone who believes just as strongly and has evidence to support their case. That's what the debate is. So to hide behind, listen, what about the kids at the lab school? They're going to see him coming in, and it's going to disrupt their whole mentality. 90% of them aren't going to know he's there. The other 10% may have heard it from an older brother or a parent or something, or an older sister. And they're going to go, either they're going to know who Steve Bannon is, or they're not. And maybe they look it up and do some research and learn something. God forbid. But again, what are you afraid of? And if, as you said, and as I said, if you purport to be a hive of learning and thought and study, shouldn't all opinions get the same? And again, if you want to have a peaceful protest outside, you know, okay, that's your right too. Once it turns violent, then you're an outlaw and you deserve to be arrested and everything else. But if you want to stand outside, if Steve Bannon is in there debating and you feel strongly about his policies and his beliefs and you want to stand outside with a sign and you want to chant, God bless you. Go for it. But to try to get somebody banned from campus is ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. 312-981-7200. Dave is in Indiana. He wants to weigh in. Hi, Dave.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you this evening?
I'm well. Thanks.
Good. I'm 100% with you, same as your producer said. We got to take into consideration how people feel so adamant against Steve Bannon. First off, he was Trump's ear whisperer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would venture to say that a good percentage of the executive orders that came forth is a good percentage of the attitudes that went to Congress and the Senate all were instigated through Steve Bannon, simply because Trump has no idea what political politics is or how to manage politics. Steve Bannon, who has been against our government for so many years.
Sure, he's been quoted as saying he wants to burn it all down. So I understand why people are so anti-Steve Bannon. There's no question in my mind about that.
Is that, as you're speaking of, the University of Chicago, which is the hotbed of conversation, the hotbed of what's right for America and what's wrong for the country, what's wrong for the world, would be wanting some, not all, but some are saying, don't let him come. I want to know what the man has to say.
Yes.
I want to be educated to what his point is and what point he's trying to make, because I can't manage what I have to say in rebuttal to what he has to say without knowing where he stands in the first place.
You have to shed a light on opinions, whether they're opinions you agree with or opinions you don't, because as you said, Dave, then I know how to argue either for it or against it. But if everything is done in the dark, if people are allowed to operate without any sort of observation, that it's not good. And then how do we protect ourselves from anything?
Take it another step. What's happening in a couple of days with the State of the Union address, which is the first fervent address that the man's going to be able to give since he's been in office? The one last year in 2017 was nothing more than just an appearance that here I am.
Right.
But a lot of people say, well, I'm not going to listen to him. I don't want to listen to him. I want to turn him in. I'm going to listen.
Of course.
If they want to turn him off, let them. But I want to listen because I want to know what he has to say, because I'm not a fan of his. I've never been a fan of his. He frightens the hell out of me. And I want to know which way I've got to turn or which way I have to make my voice be heard.
Exactly. Dave, great points. Thank you for the call. If you want to weigh in on this, 312-981-7200, more of your calls, more of your texts. But we have to do this first. And then, you know what, Cody? Let me do this. Let me ask this question. Because, you know, I have, should we do this now or should we do this at the end? We'll do it a little bit. All right, we'll do it before the news. I'm going to give you a chance to go see Potted Potter, the hit Harry Potter parody featuring all seven Harry Potter books in 70 hilarious minutes. It's now playing at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place. You can get your tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com. So pretty soon, I'm going to give you a chance to go to the February 2nd show. We'll do that in just a few minutes in WGN. All right, Steve Bannon has been invited to a debate on the University of Chicago campus to talk about the economic benefits of globalization and immigration. The university is standing behind that invitation. The professor who issued the invitation, Luigi Zingales, he's a business professor, and if I mispronounced the professor's last name, I apologize. He is standing behind this, obviously. There are groups of students and a group of faculty members who are saying, no, we should not allow Steve Bannon to come on our campus and speak, which I think is a huge, huge mistake. You have to let people talk. This is a guy who, for all intents and purposes, helped run the White House. He's got a political movement. Whether you agree with it or not, I do not, but whether you agree with it or not, he was able to do something that nobody thought was possible. He was able to mobilize enough people to get Donald Trump elected. So his ideas are worth hearing, whether you believe them or support them, or whether you don't, his ideas are worth hearing. And I'm wondering why at any university, but especially University of Chicago, why people wouldn't want him to speak. 312-981-7200. Ann is in Schaumburg. She's been holding on. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
Awesome. Yes, I had a comment about that. I am currently in medical school learning how to become a medical technologist, and I thought, gee, what if my college decided on a whim to ban another medical seeker that might have a better procedure and a better way to do something just because they had a personal bent on it?
Right. That would be crazy.
A bad idea.
And even if they were having somebody in who, you know, he's got a medical person who has a lot of people that believe what he's saying, even though it can be proven that it might not be the way. Wouldn't you want that person there too to debate with other people to get to the truth and shine a light on what's going on both sides?
Yes, but on a personal level, I think Steve Bannon is I just think, yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
In school, in college, that's the best place to experiment with ideas.
Yeah.
Companies don't like to experiment with ideas because it costs money for them. In school, it doesn't.
No, and, you know, ideas are the backbone of any education. That's why people go to college, and I appreciate the call. All right, we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, I will give you a question. If you can give me the answer, guess what I'm going to give you? I'm going to give you a pair of tickets to Potted Potter, the hit Harry Potter parody, featuring all seven Harry Potter books in 70 hilarious minutes. It's now playing at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place. You can get tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com. I have a pair of tickets for the February 2nd show, which is at 7:30. I'll give you the question that you must answer after this on WGN. All right, it's almost news time, but first, I have a trivia question. If you want to go see Potted Potter, which you should, it's a hilarious show. It's all seven Harry Potter books in 70 hilarious minutes. It's a parody. It's playing now at Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place. You can go to BroadwayInChicago.com to get tickets. But wait, I have a pair of tickets for you for the February 2nd show. That's Friday night, the 7:30 show. All you need to do is be the seventh caller who can correctly answer this question. What is Draco Malfoy's father's name? What is Draco Malfoy's father's name? If you're caller number 7 at 312-981-7200, you will be going to see Potted Potter, which is playing again at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place. So thanks to our friends at Broadway in Chicago, we will send you there. What is Draco Malfoy's father's name? It is 5:30 on 720 WGN. That means it's time for the news. This report sponsored by Cars for Kids. With the news, here's Pamela Jones. All right, we have a winner. Who is our winner? What was our winner's name, Cody?
Her name is Mary from the Northwest Side.
Mary is going to see Potted Potter, the hit Harry Potter parody featuring all 7 Harry Potter books in 70 hilarious minutes. It's now playing at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower Place. It's a great show. I talked to the creators here on this program, and they are very, very funny guys. You can get your tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com. Mary's going to see the show Friday night at 7:30. You can get your tickets now, so do that. Oh! The question, what is Draco Malfoy's father's name? It is, of course, Lucius Malfoy. Lucius Malfoy. All right, we were talking about Steve Bannon at the coming to speak at he's not speaking, he's coming to debate. So he's not going to be given free rein. It's not him just talking. He's debating his beliefs, which I think is important because I don't believe in his beliefs, but I want those beliefs out in the open. So we better know how to fight them. Joe has been hanging on. He's going to have the last word on this. Joe's on the Northwest Side. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good evening. This reminds me of what happened in Charleston, where the white supremacist protesters...
Charlottesville.
They're in a park of Charleston, yeah. They're in a permit, they're in a park, they're not blocking traffic or breaking any laws, and the left decided to block all the students coming in and marching and try to take away their right of free speech. I didn't agree with what they said. He didn't agree with what they said either.
Well, I think that's a simplistic description of the events. I don't think everybody marching against the white supremacists was from the left. I believe there's a lot of people of all political walks of life who are against white supremacists.
But they were trying to prevent their free speech, and they were breaking laws in order to do that. They didn't want to let them have their say. And when Trump said both sides were to blame, he was heavily criticized, but in fact, both sides were to blame. If they had not done that, and just...
Well, Joe, I'm going to stop you. I'm going to stop you. I appreciate it. Only one side killed somebody. So there's,
that's
you know,
true.
That ends that. Ends that. But Joe, I appreciate the call. I don't... listen, do white supremacists have a right to march? Yeah. Do I like what they have to say? No. But do I want to see who's there? Do I want to see that, hey, that's my dentist? Do I want to know that, hey, that's the guy who lives next door? Or that's the woman who watches my kid? Do I want to know who these people are? You bet I do. So that way I know how to combat their message. I know how to combat their beliefs. So yes, they did have a right to march. Just as the people who were against them had a right to march. What happened was once it gets violent, that's when things cross the line. Just like I said, if you don't want Bannon at the University of Chicago when he comes to debate, then you stand outside and you peacefully demonstrate. You don't burn things down. You don't break windows. You stand there. But does he have a right to come there and debate? Yes, he does. Oh, man. All right. Oh, beautiful. Here come the hate-filled texts. I love texters who wouldn't say poop with a mouthful, but man, they get brave. They get brave on the text line. All right, let's turn to New York City, where one bar is fighting the good fight on one level. Now, you may have seen this story. Dive bar in New York, called the Continental Bar, has put up a sign in their window, and this sign says, "Sorry, but if you say the word literally inside Continental, you have 5 minutes to finish your drink and then you must leave. If you actually start a sentence with I literally, you must leave immediately. This is the most overused, annoying word in the English language, and we will not tolerate it. Stop Kardashianism now." So that went up, and as you can imagine, the uproar on the internet has been vast and divisive. The main question is, if you owned a bar or restaurant, is there a word, and I know this is strange coming off the right of free speech, but you also, as a business owner, have a right to, if things aren't going well, I reserve the right to, provide service or not. Up to a certain point, we know you can't discriminate based on race or sex or sexual orientation, but if I, first of all, the owner says this is tongue-in-cheek, but if you had a bar, in the theoretical world, Is there a word or phrase that you would immediately eject people if they used it?
Might I also say that that's factually inaccurate what the owner said? That that's the most annoying word in the English language.
I will agree with that. That is, I think it is becoming one of the most overused and the most incorrectly used.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's the most annoying.
You know, there is a most annoying.
What is the most annoying?
We wrote about this on, I wrote about this on Curiosity.com, shameless plug. But the New Marist Institute of Public Opinion releases a poll every year on the most annoying word in the English language. And the number one spot has been the same word for the last 9 years, from 2008 to 2017.
Is it whatever?
It is whatever.
That, you know, that's the word I hate the most.
Wait, you didn't know the answer to that?
No,
you
I did not.
You were just guessing?
I just guessed.
Are you serious?
Of course. Yeah, why would I lie about that?
I'm
going to lie about bigger things. And then my lies will come to light, and I will be shouted down from the treetops.
I can't believe you knew that.
And the mountaintops. Well, I just went with the most annoying word to me.
You do hate that word.
I hate it with a passion. I will throat punch anybody who uses it.
9 years, though. Most annoying word.
Well, how long have I been on this station railing against it? I started a groundswell.
Is that why you applied for WGN?
Yep, so I could finally end the purge of whatever.
Mm.
As I say, save yourself time. Just tell me to F off. Don't say whatever, because it means the same thing.
Now, if a proponent of whatever wanted to debate you on the show, would you ban that person from the show?
No, but I would not take them seriously as a linguist. Because if they are trying to defend the use of whatever, In the way that we're talking about, as a dismissive term to get out of any sort of debate, just go, whatever, to completely discount someone's opinions, then I would let them speak and shine a light on their idiocy.
And then you'd throat punch them, wouldn't you?
Well, once we were out of this, maybe. I'm not going to admit to that right now, but they know.
Mm.
But I would let them speak. No, see, because that would go against what I said about peaceful demonstration.
Mm.
I would let you throat punch them.
Sure.
Sure. Because that's your job as a producer is to, you know, help me out.
Why do you think I've been with you for so long?
Because you're waiting for the day.
Mm-hmm.
You're waiting for the day somebody comes in here and tries to justify using the term whatever, and then you throat punch them.
Yeah.
I don't blame you. So this guy, now, I will say, there's a lot of controversy around this bar owner. While I said that this sign, he claims he meant tongue-in-cheek, the bar is closing because he's in two bankruptcies. Two, he's been accused of being a racist and discriminating against people of color because he banned saggy jeans. He also doesn't like other words and phrases being used in his bar. So I'm not championing this guy's cause. But I do like the fact that he's drawing attention to this. See, because literally is your bugaboo, isn't it? That's the word you hate when people say literally. When they don't, oh, come on, you've railed against it for minutes.
But I'm also very hyperbolic, and I say the word literally all the time.
I know, but you use it correctly or ironically.
Well,
when I know, when you're talking to me and you say it, and I know that you absolutely understand.
It bothers me sometimes, when depending on the context.
Okay.
When it's a broadcaster, that really bothers me.
Yeah.
Like if I'm watching wrestling and they'll say like, you literally just broke him. You literally just destroyed him. Like, well, no, he didn't.
No, he didn't literally destroy him.
He's in one piece.
Right. There's the guy and he stood up and everything's fine.
Right.
It's okay. He didn't literally destroy anything. Are you talking about Roger? Roger says that all the time. Oh, he's busy.
That's
I thought he was listening.
He's literally working right now.
He is literally working. He is literally helping Pamela Jones.
Literally.
Literally. Good for him. Good for him. But are the Kardashians? I don't watch the Kardashians. I know that this is what I know about the Kardashians. One, I know Kim and Kanye just named their kid Chicago. Everybody knows that. I also know Kim. Because for some reason, when I signed into Yahoo this morning, this was front page on Yahoo News, that Kim displayed some new bedtime braids in another pajama selfie. So I know that. I know that for some reason, Kim Kardashian did her hair in braids to go to bed and then posed in the tiny little underpants on her bed and took a selfie. And it was right there on Yahoo when I opened it up. Stories about the president, stories about this. Oh, hey, look at Kim Kardashian has braids. I don't need to know that, but now I do. But do they say literally a lot?
I think so.
Okay.
I don't know. Are we in the bad timeline?
What do you mean?
Are we in, like, the bad Earth timeline where things like that exist? Where, like, a girl can just, I don't know, like, pantless selfie with braids on the bed and that's front page of news? How did we get here?
Oh, we've been coming this way for a long time.
Downward spiral.
Yes, it's the end of days.
We would never do that on WGNRadio.com.
What?
I just got to say.
Post a picture of myself?
Post some woman's selfie of herself with no pants on. And
is it on there?
No.
Oh, okay. Are you sure?
No.
We should probably check. It's big news. Big news. Oh, it's all over. It's all over Yahoo News. It could be on Facebook. I'm sure it's on Facebook. Again, probably on Instagram. I don't follow
it. It's not the first thing you see front and center. We've got other stuff we talk about.
Yes, on WGNRadio.com.
That's what I'm saying.
Is it on there?
No.
No, of course not. I'm saying it's on Yahoo.
No, this is what I'm saying is we're better than that. That's
here,
why people
here,
come.
We're better than that.
I'm saying WGN Radio is I'm complimenting us. I'm pumping up our reputation as a reputable source for news that is not pantless bed selfies and braids.
But if you want pantsless bed selfies, Cody and I can braid our hair and do that. Together, like a pillow fight. We'll be laying on our bellies with our feet up in the air on big pillows with teddy bears and big lollipops.
Weren't we going to do a podcast from under my bed at some point?
Yes, that's all coming up. It's the marketing's working on it. We're going to get that all taken
for a live remote.
Yeah, they're trying to find a sponsor. Who wants to sponsor that nightmare? Somebody will. Maybe some of our good friends who sponsor the show. They'll jump on. Most annoying word from the 312, like. It's like I said, like. You were like, it has to stop. Can't get past a conversation with a person that is so lazy in their language. Absolutely correct. Somebody is shouting me down from the treetops. I don't know why. Oh, because they believe in whatever?
What were you shouted down from then?
From the treetops.
When?
When?
For what?
Because they like, because I don't like the word whatever.
Oh.
And they obviously like whatever.
Who likes that word?
I don't know. Some lunatic. Crazy lunatic who wants to, I just want to say whatever. And it's funny. Maybe it's not funny. Maybe it's tragic. My wife and daughter know my complete disdain for that word. And so every once in a while, if we're having some sort of debate, heated or otherwise, they will drop the whatever bomb. At which point, I usually flip the table, throw something through a window, and walk out.
Wow.
The dogs come right behind me because they know who the pack leader is. They're not to be messed with. All right. Wow, you look frightened. Are you frightened?
The dogs or the family or like who's
Oh, no, the dogs follow me out. The family stays where they are. And they just sit there going, I can't believe he flipped the table again. Yeah. How many times are you going to flip this table? Maybe we should stop saying whatever. And then they're, nah, whatever. But we just won't do it. All right, let's do this. Then we'll take a quick break. If you want to weigh in, you're always welcome. 312-981-7200. And then... big astrological happenings this week. Something you won't want to miss. Huge. Huge. The biggest astronomical happening. Solar, planets, things, sky. It's all coming up. A couple last things on the word, the restaurant that is kicking you out if you say literally. Basically, from the 773, Pete says, basically, if somebody starts a sentence with the word basically, I want to basically hit them in the face. This is basic Pete. Thank you, Pete. Another texter from the 219, Kim K is literally the most important person on Yahoo News, laugh out loud. Yes, she's very, Kim Kardashian, very, very important, as are all the Kardashians. And again, I don't know when they became the arbiter of all things, but they are. This is exciting. If you look up in the sky, you should be excited about this next story. And how many of us don't look up at this guy? So the other day, I'm talking to my wife, and she says to me, Wednesday night, I'm staying up late, and I'm going outside so I can look at the sky. Why? What's happening? She said, well, there's a supermoon, a blue moon, and a lunar eclipse all rolled up into one. And I thought, you're out of your mind. But she's not. Turns out my wife is of sound mind. Because there is, in fact, a supermoon, a blue moon, and a lunar eclipse all coming this week. You know what that means? A blue moon, it occurs every 2.5 years. It's another term for the second full moon in a single calendar month. So we already had one full moon in January. That was January 1st, full moon. Now we're going to have another one on the 31st. That's two. So that's a blue moon. A supermoon is when the moon is makes the moon look extra close and extra bright, up to 14% bigger and 30% brighter than a full moon at its farthest point from the Earth. So that's happening. A supermoon occurs when the full moon is at the closest point of its orbit to the Earth. So that's happening. The blue moon is happening. And what is a blood moon, you may ask? Well, thankfully you asked, because I do have the information. A blood moon, the moon will take on a dark reddish appearance during the eclipse. So it is a lunar eclipse. It is, because of the color, it's described as a blood moon. It's also, there's some confusion because a full moon was also known as the snow moon by some Native American tribes. So we've got all sorts of things happening. The lunar eclipse, it's going to be visible mostly on the West Coast. But it will be visible in North America, across the Pacific to Eastern Asia. However, the problem is totality will kind of begin and end after the moon has set here in the Midwest. You might be able to catch about, they're saying, a small percentage, a partial eclipse of the moon. But all of this is happening Wednesday night into Thursday morning. So if you're one of those people who like to go out and stare at the sky, and who doesn't like to see a supermoon? And who doesn't like to see everybody's picture on Instagram the next day and Facebook of people who took pictures of the moon? You want to go out and take a picture of the moon? That's great. Maybe some of us didn't see the moon. Now, if you're on the West Coast or somewhere where you get to see totality of the lunar eclipse, that's pretty cool. I might take a picture of that. But there was one last year, I think, a lunar eclipse, and I remember sitting out on my back porch watching it. Do you get excited about all these things that are happening up in the sky? I think it does. The moon isn't blue, just in case you're wondering. Oh, blue moon, does it turn? No, it doesn't turn blue. So, as I said, this lunar eclipse visible early in the morning, January 31st. So it's going January 31st to the 1st. Very, very exciting. Very exciting. I'll sit out. I'm not a guy who sits out with a telescope and looks up at the stars and all of that. But something like this comes along and all I have to do is walk outside, I'll walk outside. Plus, I'm going to be out Wednesday night. Not that you need to know my social calendar, but I will be out doing some things. So, just put that on your calendar. Supermoon, blue moon, lunar eclipse, all in the same night. And you're ready to go. Alright, this is, here's some other news that I don't pay much attention, to KFC that much anymore. I know they've been changing colonels left and right, the people to portray, Colonel Harlan Sanders, but they have a brand new colonel. And, just so happens to be, I used to have a big crush on this country star. Reba McEntire is the new Colonel Sanders. And people are all excited, as they should be. I watched one of the commercials. I didn't realize it was Reba at first, when I first saw the commercials. And then, of course, they started publicizing it. Hey, look, Reba McEntire is the new Colonel Sanders. Isn't that great? Because we've had Rob Lowe, we had Daryl Hammond, we had some other guy. Of course, we had the Colonel back in the day. But now, we've got Reba McEntire, the very first woman to be Colonel Sanders. And in this time of our country where people are talking about all things women, as they should be, this is a brilliant PR move. So, Colonel Sanders is Reba McEntire. She is a legendary country singer. Of course, if you don't know who Reba McEntire is, Google it. Listen to some of her music. Fancy, big song. A lot of good songs. Whoever's in New England, Reba McEntire, fantastic. So, she's in the ads for the new Smoky Mountain Barbecue Chicken. It's a half Memphis, half Carolina-style chicken sandwich. The chain is predicting it will become, quote, the most broadly appealing flavor of all chickens in the universe. Well, they just said it would be the most broadly appealing flavor. I added the rest for hyperbole. So, in this commercial, the Colonel's iconic white suit has been modified. It comes with a lot more rhinestones. Yeah, I don't see Colonel Sanders, the original Colonel Sanders, wearing a lot of rhinestones. But this is good, right? Nothing wrong with changing things up a little bit, making sure that Reba McEntire is in. Compared to KFC's other recent colonels, McEntire did a good job. Rob Lowe made zero attempt to sound Sanders-esque. Who's Dolph Ziggler? Dolph Ziggler, they say, was one of the colonels He's a professional wrestler. So Dolph Ziggler, a professional wrestler. George Hamilton was the colonel for a very short time. Norm MacDonald, of course, was the colonel. He's Canadian. I don't know how that translates. And Daryl Hammond, his portrayal was attacked for tarnishing the colonel's legacy. I don't know. Do you know who Dolph Ziggler is?
Yes. Corey?
Who is Dolph Ziggler?
He's a pro wrestler.
Well, I said that.
A sports entertainer for the WWE.
Does he have a character name?
No, it's Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph Ziggler is his name?
Yeah. WWE is trying to get away from the gimmick names.
Is that right?
Yeah, which is stupid.
Why is that?
I don't know.
So what happens to The Undertaker, Big Boss Man, or...
Exactly.
Those kind of guys.
I don't know.
The former Sting, or... I know Macho Man is deceased, but...
Right. Well, yeah. No, I agree. It's dumb. Who would you rather root for, The Undertaker or
Bob Simmons?
Right. Shelton Benjamin, Dolph Ziggler. They're fine names, but as like characters, it's not. It's Stone Cold Steve Austin, like The Rock.
Yes, I need some nicknames in my wrestling.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Do you think Dolph Ziggler is his real name, or is that like Dirk Diggler?
It's
is it a manufactured wrestling name?
I mean, sometimes they change it.
You have to, because who wants to hear, you know?
Right.
Cody Goff is not a good wrestling name.
No, it would be like Cody Powers or Cody Jericho
Cody
or something.
Cody Slam.
Cody XFL or something.
Cody XFL? It's a horrible name. It's a horrible wrestling name.
Is it?
Yeah. Reba McIntyre, we're talking about Reba McIntyre because she's the colonel. Dolph Ziggler, I didn't know he was the colonel for a while. Did you know that?
Yeah, briefly. So was Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Kid, HBK Shawn Michaels.
When was the Heartbreak Kid, Colonel Sanders?
So there's a WWE pay-per-view, no joke, 3 or 4 months ago, and literally, like, during the pre-show.
Literally. All right.
Whatever. Literally, they hit his music, and, you know, Shawn Michaels doesn't wrestle anymore, but he's a legend. And he comes out, decked out as Colonel Sanders, and he just ran into the ring and started dancing around dressed like Colonel Sanders. The giant KFC logo on the Titantron. It was
the
comical.
The Titantron.
It was dumb.
Oh, man. Well, Reba McIntyre says that she's eaten KFC her whole life because it's American, and in her mind, at least wholesome. So that's what makes her a good Colonel Sanders. Plus, she has Scottish-Irish heritage, just like the real Colonel Sanders. All right. So there you go. KFC says Reba is a perfect role model because anyone who embodies the spirit of the Colonel is qualified to play the role. So good for you, Reba McIntyre. On the other side of the news, the biggest sports story in the history of sports reporting. And we are going to talk about it right here with you where... WGN, of course.
77 Sunset Strip. 77 Sunset Strip. 77 Sunset Strip.
Talking about violating all the rules. This is something we mentioned at the very beginning of the program, so we know someone has been monitoring this broadcast all afternoon because I mentioned I was at a trivia night last night, and I blew through the category black and white TV except for this program, which I missed. So Roger must have been listening because I said, I know Roger would have gotten it. I may have said because he's very old. But so you knew, you would have known. So
yep.
I guess the FBI only because I saw Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. in the picture.
Right.
And I know he was in the FBI even though I knew that was kind of wrong.
Yeah. So that came after 77. Yeah,
77
right.
Sunset Strip was before my time, before my TV time.
And here's a little musical trivia for you.
Roger's got
so if you
hi,
saw...
Roger, by the way.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Cody. How's everybody doing?
We're fine.
So good to see you.
Thank you.
If you ever watch the intro again to the 77 Sunset Strip, you will see that the car hop... they call him Edward Burns, but he was known as Ed Burns with, I believe, two D's on Ed. And
that's a stupid spelling.
But he had what might be called a pompadour hairstyle.
Yeah.
And he was always combing his hair, and I'm sure half of the Texas oil field was in it. But somebody actually wrote and performed a song. His name in the show was Kookie, K-O-O-K-I-E.
Right. Ed Kookie Burns? I've heard that name.
Yes.
Ed Kookie Burns.
Yes. And that was his character's name, Kookie, in the show. And someone recorded a song which made it into the top 40, Kookie, Kookie, Lend Me Your Comb.
Wow.
Because all the young girls, of course, were like enamored with him.
Sure.
From the show.
Any young guy with crazy hair, and I'm looking at my producer, that tends to get attention. The crazy hair.
The crazy hair.
Yeah. And I wouldn't call it Cody's pompadour. I'd call it bedhead extreme. That's how I would call it. And I'm jealous. Listen, I'm jealous.
I'm even more jealous. Are you kidding?
Follically challenged. Yeah. Cody's got that full, he's got the youthful head of hair because he's still somewhat youthful.
Yeah.
Your dad has all his hair, doesn't he? Are you going to go bald? What about your mom's father, your maternal grandfather? Did he have hair?
My whole family has a long line of having hair and not really losing it.
You lucky son of a...
Yeah.
Sorry.
How about your family?
No, well, you see my head.
Yeah, well, I know. But you keep it.
Two of my brothers have shaved bald. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Two of my brothers have wonderful hair. Jealous.
Yeah, extremely.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, we knew...
Three of us have bad hair. Two of them have wonderful hair.
Mm, gosh.
So what are you gonna do?
Yeah. Hey.
Listen,
Baldur's beautiful.
There's so many things to resent my brothers for. Their hairline is
least.
I'm not even involved in the hairline. All right, now I tease this by one, Cody's impatient, so we can't tease Cody because at 7 o'clock, he really wanted to be out of here. But that we end at 7 now, you know,
right.
From 3 to 7. That's a big change. It started last week. But at 7 o'clock, he has a place to be because it's Royal Rumble night. For you wrestling fans, it's Royal Rumble, which means every wrestler on the face of the earth wrestles, right?
A lot of wrestlers. 30 men over the top rope battle royal. And there is a first ever women's Royal Rumble match tonight.
Is that right?
It's going to be a women's, presumably, and apparently the whole pay-per-view started at 6.
Oh, boy.
Because the Royal Rumble has to go from 6 to 10. Because who doesn't need 4 hours of wrestling plus a pre-show?
Yeah.
That's not too much.
That's Super Bowl-esque in its overkill.
And they do it once a month. Pretty much.
Yeah, that's too much.
It's dumb.
That is very dumb. But you're excited to go see it.
I'm pretty pumped. I'll probably just watch it at home.
Who do you think is going to take the Royal Rumble?
Gosh.
And that's the last guy in the ring after having thrown everybody else over the top rope.
It is. I mean, the cynic in me wants to say Roman Reigns or John Cena because WWE pushes them mercilessly.
Sure.
I would say Roman Reigns probably, but maybe Braun Strowman. Maybe they'll pull a swerve. I don't know.
All right. Well, listen. Talk about a swerve.
I know that meant so much to you.
It meant nothing to me. I wanted, you know, are there still... See, it's been so long since I've watched wrestling. Are there a lot of female wrestlers? Like, we know one former WWE female champ who's been on the show with
Victoria.
Us. Yes, Victoria's been on with us.
Yeah, there's at least 30 because they got a battle royal. Wow. Also, rumors...
Now, you watch this and you don't... Could you name 10?
Yeah.
Female wrestlers?
Yeah. Alexa Bliss, Nia Jax, Mickie James,
that's
and then
three.
There's the Bella Twins.
You're
the Bella, Nikki and what was her sister's name? Nikki Bella, the other one. Anyway, I could name about 10 if you gave me a sec.
And just FYI, thanks to Peter Indicator, 77 Sunset Strip is on every morning at 3 a.m. on MeTV.
Ooh.
So let's stay up and... After we do our podcast under the bed, then we'll stay up and watch 77 Sunset Strip. That'll be exciting. So you could only name four.
That was five or six, I think.
That was
off the top of my head. There's Charlotte Flair, or just Charlotte.
Is that Ric Flair's daughter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sasha Banks, Paige, okay. Emma. Oh, Emma got let go. Never mind.
Oh, boy. What happened?
I don't know. Bailey. Bailey's a big deal.
Do all the female wrestlers only have one name?
A lot of them do.
Is there a reason for that?
I don't know.
Is it the patriarchy?
Probably.
All right, because the male wrestlers mostly have two names.
Mostly.
Or a crazy nickname.
Yeah,
the women, they just go, people don't care.
But girls have cool names. Like, I mean, imagine,
women.
Like, just
They're
being...
Women.
Sorry, I apologize to everyone who's been offended by that. But, no, imagine...
Triggered.
Imagine just walking to the way and being like, here comes Brian. Like...
Ooh.
I don't know. Like, Brian Jones or something. But when you go, like, Charlotte, I don't know. There's something, to me, kind of...
Right.
Artistic about that.
Well, listen, that's not the big story. I teased that this was the biggest sports story in the history of sports reporting. We've got music to set this up.
This is fans above all. This is maximum action. Let's store more ball, fewer infractions. This begins in 2020. The future is near. More access, more everyone, more everything here. This is our moment, our story to tell. This is history begun. This is the XFL.
Woo! The XFL is returning. Yes, friends, in case you've been thinking to yourself, man, I am so tired of the NFL with their long commercial breaks and crazy rules and long, drawn-out three-hour games. Well, guess what, football fans? Vince McMahon announced on Thursday that the XFL is returning. New, improved, completely different from the old XFL. No connection with wrestling whatsoever. He's not even going to be the public face of this. And he's taking his time this time. Vince McMahon rushed last time. The last time the XFL was in place, if you remember, and I have a story about that because I remember horrifically, the old XFL. Last time the XFL was in, oh my goodness, there was, Vince announced it, and then they started. Well, this time he's taking his time, and he's getting a lot of input. He's getting input from football people. He's getting input from you, the crazy fan. He wants to know what's going on. He's talking to safety experts, medical experts, football experts, all the experts, experts on being experts, to bring you the best possible product that he can. Faster, safer, less rules, maybe no halftime. Cheerleaders, remember the old scantily clad cheerleaders? They're not happening. Any political statement? Not happening. Doesn't matter if you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, you don't like lemurs, he doesn't care. You're not allowed to talk about it during the XFL. This is exciting. This is sports entertainment. We got to get Vince McMahon on this.
No, this is sports.
Oh, yeah, this is just
real
sports.
This is football, Brian.
I heard.
Real football.
Football. 17 years ago, Vince McMahon tried this. The original XFL. He tried it. He was on NBC. NBC thought, oh, man, we got a cash cow, baby. Not so much. Lasted one season. First day of games, big ratings for NBC. Second week of games, not so much. By the end, boom. Who was the only champion of the original XFL?
I don't know.
The Los Angeles Extreme.
Oh.
With an X.
How could I forget?
Come on now. Come on. All right, we're going to talk about this. We'll give you the nuts and bolts. What you need to know about the new and improved XFL and how I almost died because of the XFL. A lot to get to. Cody's very excited. Cody could not contain his happiness when he came in today. So we will talk all about that and get your thoughts. And all the sports guys with their hot takes. We don't care about that. We have our own hot takes. And we're committed. As they say in poker, this show is pot committed to the XFL already. Don't we want to be the official broadcast team of the XFL? Aren't we already lobbying for that?
Oh, yes.
Aren't we already the official flagship show of the XFL?
Yeah.
Of course we are. Who knows where we'll be in 2020? 6 feet under an XFL field, cheering violently. All right, let's do this. Then there's more. Vince McMahon announced that the XFL is coming back. Oh man, Cody, did you immediately go out and buy a jersey? Did you make a jersey out of a magic marker and a T-shirt?
I have a double XL. I don't know why. XFL T-shirt.
Really?
Yes.
Look at you. Did you pull it out? Did you run around town screaming and hooting and hollering?
I almost wore it tonight.
Now, somebody texted in and said they don't remember anything about the XFL except for He Hate Me, which was a nickname that one of the players had on. He Hate Me became the poster boy for the XFL. Now, Vince still has not decided if they're going to allow players to have nicknames on the back of their jerseys for this new one. He says he will pay them enough to play the game full time. There will be bonuses for winning. Here are the original XFL. There were eight original XFL teams. The Birmingham Thunderbolts, the Chicago Enforcers, the New York, New Jersey Hitmen, the Orlando Rage, the Las Vegas Outlaws, the Los Angeles Extreme, the Memphis Maniacs with an X, and the San Francisco Demons. Very terrifying names.
Terrifying. For these teams. Well, they were extreme.
Oh, they were extreme, and they sowed dread into the hearts of their opponents with those names. I was at the very first home game of the Los Angeles Extreme.
This blows my mind.
I was there because they were playing the Chicago Enforcers. And so they played at Memorial Coliseum. And so the first game of the year, the L.A. Extreme, were on the road, and they lost. But their second game was their home opener at the Memorial Coliseum, which is where USC is. And so my buddy he's like, hey, we're going to go to the XFL. And it was raining that day. And my excitement for going to the first XFL game in Los Angeles had waned in the week leading up to the game. So when I woke up that Saturday and it was raining, I thought, oh, good, I haven't heard from him. Maybe we're not going. That would have been a blessing. However, I get a call. Hey, we still going to the game. I've got the tickets. I'm like, oh. All right. So I quick had to drive down to the Valley, pick him up and another guy, and then we drove down to USC, which is in Los Angeles proper. All I will say about the crowd at an XFL game was it resembled the exercise yard at Pelican Bay Prison. It was one of the most terrifying groups of adults ever brought together in one place. Imagine, if you will, every race, creed, color of human being, but the really bad portion of that every race, creed, and color. It was the energy as the game wore on became more and more hostile. The violence was palpable. At one end of the field was a giant platform where a hot tub, a huge hot tub had been installed, where people, I don't know how you won the hot tub seats, but people were watching the game from hot tubs as scantily clad cheerleaders danced around them. Because this was, in the initial foray into the XFL, wrestling and football were intertwined. A lot of the same theatrics used for WWF at that time were in play for the XFL. Vince McMahon was, in fact, despite saying he wasn't going to be, Vince was the face of the XFL. And he was going to take over. So the game starts, and it was poorly played football. Because, you know, the XFL was made up of people who hadn't made it in football. Some former NFL and CFL players, some former college players. A lot of guys, you know, if you weren't expecting to see the NFL, you were sadly mistaken. And if you weren't expecting to leave in one piece, you were probably sadly mistaken. There were about three or four fights on our side of the field. Not by players, but people. I don't know why, because how could you be that invested in a team that had never played yet? It wasn't as if the rivalry between the LA Extreme and the Chicago Enforcers had been brought to biblical proportions like Chicago Green Bay. There was none of that. It was, hey, here's a new thing for people who can't afford to go to the Rams games or the Raiders. This was every Raiders fan who couldn't afford to go to a Raiders game or buy the face paint that is a prerequisite to sit at a Raiders game. It was terrifying. And it's raining. So people are miserable. Because it's, you know, it's January. It's raining. It's just horrifying.
But it was in Los Angeles. So it was still warm, right? And there were hot tubs out there.
Like, yeah, but it was like, I don't know, 60 and rainy.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know. But that's a piece of history that will never be taken away from.
But that is the first XFL, Brian. This is a new dawn.
What did we, if there's six things we can take away, a few things we can take away from Vince, we gotta hear some of the press conference is classic. We'll hear some of that after the news. But let me give you just a few things to take away before we go to break. Because what do I got, a couple minutes?
Yeah, come on, yeah, a couple minutes.
A couple things. Here's how the league's going to be. As I mentioned, it's going to be the same eight teams. Eight teams just like before. But that's where the similarity ends.
Well, the preliminary plan is eight.
Preliminary plan is eight teams. We don't know. We don't know what cities are going to have a franchise. But we do know that if there's a Chicago franchise, Cody and I are the voices of that franchise. And if you are right now considering investing in the XFL team for Chicago and you do not hire us, you're making a horrible business mistake. Could you hire experienced sportscasters? Yeah, but why? We know enough about football, and we'll learn. We'll learn what we don't know. But I hosted a sports show for a while here. I don't know if you know that. I used to be considered a sports guy.
Right, and I watch wrestling.
Right,
so.
And we have hot takes.
Well, so hot.
So they're calling for eight teams with 40-man rosters. Regular season is going to contain 10 games. Postseason are going to be four semifinal matchups and a championship game. That's cool. Regular season slated to begin in early January. You know why? Because the NFL season's over then, duh. WWE, and there will not be any crossover between the XFL and the WWE. None. Separate. Two separate things. New personnel will be hired to oversee the XFL operations. Vince will not be overseeing this. The XFL is going to strive for quality football, but safe and family-friendly. Because nothing says family-friendly like 300-pound men running into each other with the force of a car crash. Nothing says family-friendly, unless you're a family of cars. Then it's perfect. But they want family-friendly, so that's why they're getting rid of the crazy cheerleaders. McMahon also wants the games to last potentially no more than 2 hours and mentioned that there's a possibility no halftime and fewer commercials. Well, that'll be easy because a lot of people aren't going to invest in that. So that'll be simple. Done and done. All right. We'll hear some of the... When I tell you that this press conference devolved into something hilarious, you must believe me. So we will have some clips from the big XFL press conference. And again... We cannot be more adamant that this show is 100% in. We want nothing more than to be identified with the XFL. News time in a couple on WGN. The XFL is coming back in 2020. Two words. What would you do? What would you do if you wanted to reimagine football? Two words. Robots and bats. Not flying bats. Baseball bats.
Ooh, with spikes in them?
No, it doesn't have to be. That's not family friendly. Put a spike in a bat, that's not family friendly. You just kneecap a guy or a robot.
Here's the thing, you can
only use the bats against robots. Okay. So if a robot running back is going downfield and you're, you know, a cornerback, you can take a bat to that robot running back if you catch it.
What can the robot do to you,
just,
though?
We're just spitballing here.
Yeah, okay.
What kind of robot what?
What can the robot do to you?
Oh, a straight-arm shiv from a robot is going to put you right on your bottom.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
A shiv?
A straight-arm shiv. If you Heisman him. If a robot Heisman somebody.
Isn't a shiv when you knife somebody?
Yeah, you could be both.
Well, it's a metal arm. That's pretty much the same thing.
That's not family-friendly.
No, but a straight-arm shiv,
make it exciting.
That's just a move. You bang. You drop somebody.
Here's my idea.
What's your idea?
Okay, so all the players, you have... Yes, I did. I'm trying to remember what it is. All the players, instead of spikes, have sheets of plastic stuck into the bottom of their shoes.
Ooh.
The playing field is not real turf, and it's not astroturf. It's one solid piece of metal that is electrified.
So this is like the old electronic football?
Exactly. Exactly. So, and everybody in the stands gets a controller.
Oh, no.
Wait, and you can control where your player goes.
Old electronic football.
Yes.
Yes, you got it. Listen, you're too young. Look up electronic football. And you would position the players, and you turn it on, and the metal would vibrate, and the pieces would just go every which way. And the person with the one player had a little foam ball that was holding, and the whole thing would vibrate. That's my vibrating electronic football sound. And so, but the players would turn in circles, they would go sideways, they'd go backwards,
they'd fall over, spin around, they'd go the wrong way.
And you would take, between plays, it would take like 20 minutes to set up the offense and the defense, and then you'd flip the switch again, and it was like you were electrocuting these poor little plastic football people. I like that, Roger.
Thank you.
I don't know if you give everybody a controller, but I think that
just the coach.
Right,
the coach.
Coach on offense flips the switch, and then after the play, and then when the team switch, the ball possession switches, then the other coach gets to flip the switch.
There you go.
All right, we're putting these all in. Did you find out?
I googled it. I'll do some more research later.
Yeah, do some more research. We'll get some. Everybody had one as a kid.
Yeah. And I could never it was fun playing with it at the time because it was so hodgepodge. But now, after I got older and was thinking about, hey, maybe my kids would like one of, I'm thinking, what's the point of this?
There was no point. Point was to get your money.
Yeah.
All right, some things to take away. Vince mentioned a multi-platform approach to the games. Do you have that?
I don't have that clip, no.
All right. He said there's been network interest. He didn't mention who, but there's a lot of different platforms that were not around, so maybe he goes with a streaming service. Who knows? Who knows? Now, this was very interesting. He talked about the players. Do you have something on that?
Oh, I've got something on the players.
Right, let's hear about the players.
This speaks for itself.
Yes.
Hi, will President Trump support this in any way, even if it's just with statements? And can he speak to San Diego as a potential market?
I have no idea whether or not President Trump will support this, and let me, this is an opportunity for me to say that as far as our league is concerned, it'll have nothing to do with politics, absolutely nothing, and nothing to do with social issues either. We're there to play football. We want really good football, and I think that's what fans want as well. When they tune in, I don't know if they want to be dealing with political issues and things of that nature. They want good football. That's what we're going to deliver.
Wow. Well, NFL television ratings have fallen 17% over the last two seasons. So I mentioned this before. Vince is not, you don't get to take a knee for a social issue, a political issue. There'll be no statements on your shoes, nothing. He also says if a player received a DUI, they would not play. Players with criminal records will matter. He's going for character. A suspension structure, however, was not discussed. As for recent NFL conversations surrounding the national anthem, well, he just told you there's going to be none of that. And I mentioned he has not made a decision on nicknames. He does want fan input. He wants to know.
He wants a lot of input.
I don't think Vince thought this out fully, but he must have.
He sold
like $100 million in stock.
Mm-hmm.
WWE stock that he's putting into this, I think it was $100 million. That's crazy.
Here's the thing. Here's what I found hilarious about the press conference.
Yes.
Is that it didn't come off like he thought this out at all. If I may play one more clip.
You may.
Do you have any plans or specific ideas about how you're going to keep players safe?
Sure. Reimagining the game of football means you're reimagining it on all levels, as well as safety, and that's what we'll do. And to make this a safe environment, as safe as possible, it's still football, but to make it as safe as possible.
Any specific measures that you can say?
No, not anything specifically, other than, you know, we're going to bring in experts.
Sure, we're going to bring in experts. They're going to say it's safe. And then somebody's going to go, well, Vince, that's fine. But again, when you have 300-pound men running into each other with the impact of a car crash, there's only so much you can do.
He had no answers for any of the questions.
All he knows is he's got 2 years to put this together. But he's got to find cities. He's got to get franchises. He's got to find venues for them to play. Again, he's got broadcasters for the Chicago team, if there were to be one.
Yeah.
Cody and I are, our hats are firmly in the ring.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Oh, Roger, we're...
And I've got another suggestion.
Well, yes?
Okay, so what is one of the things that kind of drags out the time of a
instant
football?
Instant replay.
The instant replay, but even more so. Commercials.
Oh, sure. Well, he said that. Right. There's going to be less commercials.
All right. Now, here's how he's going to do it. So he goes out and gets maybe 10... big sponsors, you know, the big companies,
sure,
that can afford this, okay?
Like Budweiser or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Apple.
And there are no commercials during the game. At the beginning, there's a billboard brought to you by blah, 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 blah. Just like in car racing, all the players have patches all over their uniform with the logos of not only those sponsors, but then if you want to play in the XFL, you need to go out and get your own sponsors, because we're not paying you a salary.
Oh, no.
So now they've got their own patches and getting a salary from whoever's sponsoring them, and you go.
Yeah, but that takes away from the team concept. I think I like your idea of the patches for the big sponsorships. I'll go with you. I'll go with you that far. I don't think you can't.
Well, then let the team owner, the team manager, whoever, go get their own local.
They're going to do that for. They're going to do that for the stadium, for naming rights and all that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
that stuff.
But there's a way to get around all the darn commercials we got to wait for, because you know they have commercial timeouts in these football games. You know, it's like, oh, we'll be back with the action. I don't see any player hurt. I don't see anyone taking a timeout. It's a commercial timeout so they can sell advertising. That takes 3, 4, 5 minutes. You do 10 of those, that's almost an hour right there.
All right.
And you got more time to do other stuff on a Sunday.
Listen, that's Vince's saying that. He wants the game at 2 hours.
There you go.
We're moving fast.
All right.
That's all there is. Do you have any more audio?
Yeah, and may I mention, he wants it 2 hours, and yet we are in the midst of a 4-hour WWE pay-per-view that also had a pre-show.
Well, listen, that's different. I don't know if you heard me before. Wrestling and football not going to intermingle. I mean, nothing. Nothing together.
Yeah.
It's going to be completely different.
Here's what else he had to say.
Yes.
This is following his comments about how you have to have a really clean record.
Oh, sure.
This is a good one.
Because nobody's ever
any invites being submitted to players like Johnny Manziel, Tim Tebow, Colin Kaepernick.
One of the things when I said the quality of human being is very important and just as important as the quality of the player, what I mean by that is you want someone who does not have any criminality whatsoever associated with them. And in the XFL, even if you have a DUI, you will not play in the XFL. So that would probably eliminate some of them, not all of them. If Tim Tebow wants to play, he could very well play.
Wow, Tim Tebow.
Did you notice he mentioned two people that kneel during the anthem, and then he only said, oh, Tim Tebow would be
allowed. Tim Tebow can play because he's a good Christian boy.
Sure.
He's, you know, played a little baseball. Tim Tebow's fine. Yeah, good luck, quite frankly, Vince. Good luck finding anybody who's going to play professional, because you're getting paid, some level of professional football, who hasn't had some sort of, not everybody, of course, but if you've gone through high school and college, and maybe you played in the NFL for a while, maybe you played somewhere, there's a good chance somebody's done something, you know? That doesn't mean that they can't be rehabilitated. That doesn't mean that you should have, you know, guys who are accused or proven to be domestic violence participants. Any of that, sure, you don't sign them. But they go, listen, you got a speeding ticket, you can't play in the XFL. Seriously? Is that right?
What I think is, if you want a faster game and you want to cut out the stuff that people don't care about, cut the national anthem.
Wow.
Just from the broadcast.
Oh,
just
from the
broadcast. Do it beforehand,
sure.
And don't show anything. And
yeah.
And have people not get. Do it before the teams even come out. Why not?
Well,
is that that big of a deal?
Bring the teams out. No, I'm all for. I like the national anthem at a sporting event.
I like it too. But if your goal is to shorten the game,
to cut the broadcast
and
out,
not be political.
Sure.
That to me seems like trimming the fat a little bit.
Yeah, but that's never going to fly. Because being non-political doesn't mean being un-American, Cody. I don't know what you're saying. Listen, don't make me rethink our partnership for the XFL broadcast.
I won't make you rethink it. I'm just
you're some sort of, communist.
I'm awestruck with how politically he talked about everything when he said he didn't want it to be political.
He doesn't want it to be political unless it's the politics he doesn't agree with.
Right.
Then if it's the politics he agrees with, come on. You know? You love America, you can play here.
You guys are doing the play-by-play and color analyst?
Yeah, we're gonna do it all.
Okay, can I be the stadium announcer?
Yes.
We'll have to. Yeah, sure.
Well, wait. We said that they want the games to be shorter. So
yeah, Roger. I don't know. Can you abbreviate?
It depends how the traffic is around the stadium.
Can you bring it in? that's true. If every feeder artery is very tight. Granted. Okay. Gotcha.
That was good.
Very good.
You're welcome.
Very nice, Roger.
That was great.
Kudos. Our hats are tipped. I'm not even going to try to top that. I'm going to say, listen, we're going to do this. And then the second biggest sports story of the last decade. Oh, man. It's like the beat is back. We're doing all sports all the time. This one, strong Chicago connections to the it could rival the Super Bowl. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not. In fact, in some houses, it's bigger than the Super Bowl. What is it? I'm not telling you now. Duh, it's called the tease. We're still all a Twitter about the XFL coming back, which is very, very big. But that's not the only sports story with Chicago connections. This is big, big, big news. Three Chicago area dogs are competing in the Puppy Bowl next week. I know, Roger, your dog, my dog's not any of them.
Well,
wait a minute.
That's not right.
Your dog's not a puppy. Neither are mine.
Yeah, that's true. Well, they could be old enough to be a coach. Can't they
age
coach?
Age discrimination. No, I think it's all puppies.
Oh, darn.
I think it's all puffies. Puppies. Because it's puppies. Team Ruff and Team Fluff. That's why I got confused.
Oh, I see.
Team Ruff and Team Fluff.
I'd go with the Ruff. That sounds tough.
Do you ever watch the Puppy Bowl?
I saw parts of it.
I know.
Not last year before, I think.
Yeah, people go crazy for that.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's all, oh, man, so much cuteness.
Yeah.
All in one place. That's too much cuteness, quite frankly.
Can we put them on the electrified field? With the
No.
Okay, no.
Oh, Roger.
No, with the little plastic
Send
things
your
on.
Angry emails to whatever Roger's email address is, or just come and pick it. Yeah, that's fine.
I know.
Roger wants to put dogs on an electrified field. That's, wow.
With
and
the people little say plastic
I,
stuff.
People say I.
Yeah.
Irreverent and
they
uncaring.
Do.
They do. Sure they do. And most of the time they're right. But I would, while I thought it was great to subject grown men to that treatment.
Not puppies.
I'm not putting puppies on there.
No.
Not at all.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. One of these puppies, Miss Bree, is a Jack Russell Terrier mix. She's from Palatine. She's very, very excited. She's going to be in the Puppy Bowl, which is on Animal Planet.
Mm.
I'm sure I still get Animal Planet on my cable set. Well, I'm sure it's on there. I would understand it, so I do get it.
Yeah.
I understand the whole thing. So she's going to be there.
What position is she playing?
I don't think I'm not well enough versed in the puppy bowl to say if there's positions.
Okay.
I think what they do is just throw all these puppies into a big thing,
mm-hmm.
a big arena type mm-hmm. thing, and maybe throw a ball in there, and then the puppies just are cute. That's all. That's all. Puppies just roll around as puppies do. They kiss on each other. They're rolling around.
Yeah.
So she's going to be there. There's two other dogs. It's 2 o'clock, 2 p.m. So the good news is we'll be able to watch it before the show starts next week. That's going to be exciting. So it's there's a lot of Puppy Bowl pregame programming. Of course, there is 90 puppies from 48 animal shelters and rescue organizations. People are calling in if you're an expert on the Puppy Bowl, and if you want to handicap it for us, if you have a favorite, I don't know enough to wager a bet.
Yeah, which side is it going to be the roughs or the toughs that get the coin toss? I want the odds on
that. I think here's the thing. There's probably a lot of prop bets for the Puppy Bowl.
Yeah.
But anyway, 90 puppies from 48 animal shelters and rescue organizations are on the roster. And they go for the... on the line is the Chewy.com Lombarky Trophy. Get it? Get it? So the Lombarky Trophy is up for grabs. So Miss Bree is on Team Ruff. She was adopted from the Anti-Cruelty Society in August, so that's good. Her brother, Mr. Pecan, is also a rescue dog, but I don't believe Mr. Pecan is not playing in the Puppy Bowl.
Oh.
I think he blew out his knee years ago.
No.
I think there's some structural damage. I think Mr. Pecan has some sort of, he's on IR.
Okay.
So Mr. Pecan
long-term,
is not playing.
Long-term IR.
Long-term IR. Just for Puppy Bowl, not for average puppydom.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, One Tail at a Time rescued Stripe. Stripe also she is on Team Fluff. It's a yellow Labrador mix, spent several days battling parvovirus.
Oh, no.
Yes, but overcame the illness, enjoyed the Northside foster family. So that is good news. His favorite activities include, and I love that they do just like they do on the college bowl games or mm-hmm. other games like that, where the dogs they'll put up the info about the dogs.
Right.
And it'll be, went to the Ohio State University, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this will be Stripe. Had parvovirus, very contagious, intestines not affected. So it'll be exciting. So he likes to play fetch, chase around his puppy friends, and nap. So that's always good. Now Boppity, also on Team Fluff, will be available for adoption on game day.
Oh, so they...
Yes, you can adopt some of these puppies on game day. Don't worry about it. It's very exciting. If you're looking to adopt, it is a Chihuahua Terrier mix. And this came from Mississippi, from an overcrowded shelter, and was at the South Suburban Humane Society in Chicago Heights, where I actually adopted 3 of my dogs.
Well, there you
That's
go.
Right. So, if they have good dogs down there, a good stock
mm-hmm.
made the Puppy Bowl. Goody, goody. Nice. Bobbity likes playing with other dogs and shaking his squeaky toys.
Is there Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo? Or
I would imagine if they came in some sort of litter, there was probably a Bobbidi and a Boo. But now, Bibbidi, of course, or Bobbidi.
Bobbidi.
Bobbidi is the Bobbidi made the team. There is a sister. Bibbidi. We don't know if there's a Boo. We don't know any. We don't know. They came from Mississippi. So probably not. There's probably Bibbidi, Bobbidi, and Jim. That's, Mississippi kind of...
Jim Bob.
Yeah, they weren't down with the... they weren't down with how it was supposed to go. So there you go. This is very
That's
exciting.
Nice.
Yeah, so we'll be covering that in after the game. We'll do a post-game analysis next week when the show starts. We'll be all over it.
Will we have comments from the players?
Well, sure. We'll have comments from the players or some facsimile. How are you going to know if I play just puppies whining? You're not going to know for sure if it's Bobbidi or Miss Bree or just, some sound effect that we found online.
Okay.
Not that I would ever pass that off as a real dog interview.
No.
But what am I going to bring dogs in here?
That'd be kind of cute.
It would be cute.
Yeah.
Maybe, Cody, see if we can line up our own puppy bowl. Talk to some of these shelters. If I could get 72 puppies in here for the entire show, that would be great. I'll just sit on the floor, cross-legged, and let the puppies nibble on me. And we'll cover you in liverwurst. That'll be how the that'll be the show. So get on that. You have a week to get that all wrangled. Call Steve Dell. He probably has a line on 72
puppies.
He's got
connections.
Yeah, we'll bring them in by the busload. Just bring them in crates. Crates of dogs. Get them past security. I don't know how that's going to work. We'll figure it all out before next week. Don't worry. We would never let you down when it comes to exploiting puppies for our own personal gain. All right, listen, we got to do this, take a break, and then Karen Conti will come in. We'll find out what's on her big broadcast before we get out of here. It's all happening on WGN.